Good morning, Mr. Nguyen.
Then, welcome everybody. The time is now 8:30 a.m. on July 8th, 2022, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Ms. Poe, would you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Catarino?
Present.
Mr. Dinar? Mr. Dinar, it looks like you're...
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now.
Yeah, I'm present. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott? Ms. Shreve?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Mr. Nguyen?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Please note that the times stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to a former agenda item at a later time. The board may also reorder non-timed items. The board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. You'll find the link on the meeting agenda that is posted to the board's website. I want to take a moment to recognize all the board members for all of your hard work. Each board member spends many hours preparing for each meeting, and we do appreciate your time and effort. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the board staff who has worked diligently to ensure that these board meetings are as seamless as possible. They prepare all of the materials for us ahead of time, make sure that we have access to all the information that we need, as well as our attorney, Ms. Jean Galvin, who also spends numerous amounts of hours preparing for these meetings. Attendance at the board meeting is eligible for continuing education credit if it is at least 4 hours long. Should its duration be 4 hours or more, make note of the code words provided throughout the meeting. To report the code words to the board staff for the purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board meetings page for this particular meeting. It is possible that today's meeting will not be 4 hours in duration. And if that is the case, thank you for your understanding, but we will still do code meeting or code words in the event that it does go the full 4 hours or more. Great. We'll move to the call to the public. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board will limit the number of persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02H, the board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. The board members may not discuss the matter with each other or with other members of the public or with the member of the public addressing the board. The only option available is to instruct staff to place the topic on a future agenda if applicable. Those wishing to speak, please unmute your line, state your name, and I will call on you. Hearing none, we will move to agenda item number 5, board council's update. Ms. Galvin, do you have an update for the board?
I have no update at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. We will move to agenda item number 6, the consent agenda. Are there any recusals for the consent agenda? A board member may request to remove an item for the consent agenda for independent discussion and action. Are there any such requests? Hearing none, do we have a motion to approve the items on the consent agenda?
Madam Chair.
Dr. Meyer.
Oh, sorry, Dr. Meyer.
I'd like to remove E. The request to retake the EPPP from Gennaro Huerta.
Thank you. So we have moved item number E. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Dr. Meyer, you have requested a review of item number E, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the request to retake the EPPP for Dr. Huerta, temporary license holder. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I have about this is going to be the seventh time he's attempted the ACCC. Is there a limit at any point to this? I think there's... At some point, does this performance indicate that this person is not prepared to practice independently?
Madam Chair, Dr. Meyer, I am not aware of either a statutory limitation or restriction on the number of attempts to the ACCC. And to the best of my knowledge, I invite Ms. Folks to also chime in. I don't know that ASPPB prescribes a limit or a maximum number of attempts.
Thank you.
Ms. Ramona, we do not have a limit. So had people.
Sorry. What was that, Dr. Mott?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, I was late.
I believe Dr. Malott said that there is no limit on the number of times you can take
it. Yes, that's correct.
Either by the board or by ASPPB.
So then,
Dr. Madam Chair, committee, board members, sorry, this is Kathy. I wanted to add to that. ASPPB allows ECCC candidates to take the ECCC four times a year. So they do have a limit in terms of how many times within a time frame, but they don't have an overall maximum. And also with Dr. Huerta, his scores have increased in between the last time and this time. And I can't speak about scores, but you may want to look and see if he's getting there, if I could put it that way.
Well, so then I would suggest, I mean, he put forth a study plan that was less detailed than what he's done over numerous attempts. I would request a much more thorough plan as opposed to just saying he's going to study these topics again. This was the highest score he's received, but it's bounced around and it's been, I mean, I don't know that this one last score indicates that he's almost there. I think there needs to be a very comprehensive study plan and more than just saying here are the topics I'm going to review.
Would that be a fair request from the board?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And maybe he can do an analysis of his, his weak points. And then sometimes you might just have to take another class and, you know, or get a tutor or something. Something has to change in order to pass. So. Okay.
So, Dr. Meyer, Dr. Malott, is that a motion?
I would make a motion to request a much more comprehensive study plan prior to approving this prior to approving him to retake the exam.
Perfect. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Guyner opposed.
And I oppose as well.
All right, we have two oppositions. The motion does carry. All right, we will now move to item number 17, Dr. Davey. I am recused from this item, so I'm going to let you take over if you are so willing. But this is for application for Whitney Wagner.
Yes, thank you so much. Didn't know I was going to get to go first. Give me 2 seconds. I guess this should go very fast. should go very fast, though. Ms. Wagner has come forward. We didn't have a quorum to be able to.
Dr. Davey, your internet connection seems to be very weak. You're fading in and out.
Sorry. I'm having to use my iPad today. So I'll speak louder. That's probably my issue. Her application is complete. If you didn't hear that, she did her undergraduate and her master's at ASU. She's listed a single organization here in Arizona where she received her supervised experience towards certification. The individuals engaged in her certification were licensed behavior analysts at the time of the supervision, and the rest of the application is complete. I would then move that the board accept this application and grant Ms. Wagner licensure in the state of Arizona.
Seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Anyone opposed? Hearing no opposition. Anyone abstaining? Hearing no abstaining, except for Dr. Davis Wilson. The motion carries. Thank you very much. The microphone is back to you, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Thank you, Dr. Davis. Can we go ahead and do Dr. Meyer, application number 16? If you do not mind, this is for Dr. Jose Bezerra.
Yes. So Dr. Bezerra submitted his application. The concern is that his internship did not have a second supervisor who was licensed in Arizona. His internship was with a private practice. He had a psychologist supervising him, but they reported another psychologist living in Virginia as the secondary supervisor, Dr. Alan Inton. He reported that he was able to consult the psychologist as needed for secondary supervision, but there's no indication that he was licensed here or had an exemption due to COVID. And after looking at the statutes, there's no way to redo a supervision or redo internship once someone's graduated, other than going through a respecialization program. In addition to that, after several requests, he still does not have the coursework that meets the requirements for the assessment category. Now that might be able to be retained, but since remediated, but since he cannot correct the internship, the application review committee recommended that either the application be denied or he be given the opportunity to withdraw his application.
And he did. He withdrew it.
Oh.
Yes, Madam Chair, just for clarification purposes, he did request withdrawal. So I think that the board should entertain a motion whether to approve or accept his request to withdraw. He's clearly wanting to circumvent the denial of the license of the application.
Thank you, Ms. Peckman.
So I would make a motion that we approve him withdrawing his application.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Madam Chair, as terms of discussion, I just wanted to make a comment that if the applicant gets licensed elsewhere, he can probably come in a year after through universal recognition. So this is not the end of the road for him to get licensed in Arizona. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Sorry, I'm moving quick today on you guys. I apologize. All right, hearing no further discussion, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. We will now move to the next agenda item. The time is now 8:46 a.m., so we're going to move to the first section of items on this agenda scheduled for review on or after 8:45 a.m. The board may vote to go.
Madam Chair, may I interject? I may have committed an error on your script. The timed item is items begin at 9 a.m. If your script says 8:45, that's my mistake.
I apologize. Thank you for that clarification. We are not moving to the timed item quite yet. Let's go to item number 15, Dr. Meyer. This is going to be for Dr. Weigert regarding her license. Dr. Meyer, would you please provide a summary of the application to the board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Weigert applied for licensure. The problem, again, is an internship. She submitted two part-time internships, one that was done from 2014 to 2015, and another that was done from 2018 to 2019. And there were problems with both of these both of these internships. The 2014 one did not have a training plan, nor did it have 25% of the experience being direct client contact. The second internship, and the first one did not have 1500 hours. The second one in 2018 to 2019 also did not have 1500 hours. In addition, there was not enough supervision provided for that. So together, there's more than the required 1500 hours, but it was not done within 24 consecutive months. And there were problems with neither of them met the requirements individually. Now, subsequently, Dr. Weigert submitted additional hours, and it was done last night and this morning. Unfortunately, it was not done on an internship verification form, nor was it provided by the internship supervisor. She had a faculty member from her university just write out additional hours that Dr. Weigert completed and for the 2014-15 internship. But that should be completed by the internship supervisor. Since she's now reporting additional hours that may then meet the requirements, I would suggest that we move this back to the application review committee and put out a request for additional information.
Thank you. Ms. Gowan, if we're putting this back to the ARC, do we need the motion?
Yes, because it is on your agenda, but I think to perhaps save a little bit of time, I would ask Dr. Meyer if you could, because I believe the applicant is on the line. Could you explain what you would need in advance of the next ARC meeting?
Yes, so we need an internship verification form and a training plan from the internship supervisor from the 2014 to 2016 period, verifying all of those hours. We would also require supervision documentation and any record keeping for those hours.
And including logs.
Logs. And that needs to come from the internship supervisor.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the motion would be just to remand the matter back to ARC for further processing.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Ms. Pakanon, do you have a suggestion?
Madam Chair, I do. I actually think that we could probably take care of item 14.
Perfect. All right. We will move to, thank you for that. We'll move to item number 14. Ms. Pakanon, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. So as the board, as you're aware, we have been promulgating two rule packages, two very substantial sets of revisions to the rules that govern the practice of both psychology and also behavior analysis. And so as part of the promulgation process, we are required to publish the proposed changes for purposes of allowing the public to provide comments to those changes. And so we have we held an oral proceeding to receive public comment. None was received. We did, however, receive just one comment to only one proposed change. And the change is specific to R426207. That is the rule prescribing the requirements for psychologists to complete continuing education. So the proposed addition in that rule at R426207B3, the board is proposing that at least 4 hours of CE regarding diversity, including, and there are a series of examples of diversity, that is now that will be a requirement for psychologists to complete every licensure cycle. And what the commenter is suggesting is that she would like to see the rule be more specific or more precise. She would like the board to include the terms ethnicity, language, and culture to that list. What I will describe, and some members, I know you weren't here for this discussion, but when the board discussed this rule or this proposed change some time ago, the intention was to be quite broad and quite comprehensive with respect to what diversity topics would be acceptable. The board was really challenged to identify each and every instance or example of a diversity topic. And so the intent of this rule is really to say that diversity includes these topics, but will include others as well, not listed. So I do think that the board can find that this rule, the spirit, the intent of is as comprehensive as the commenter would like it to be. And I'm happy to relay that back to the commenter. If the board, however, decides that this rule needs to be needs to be revised, what will happen then is we make the revision, we put it out for public comment again. So the board really has two paths to take. Stay on track to send the rule to the governor or the rule package to governor's regulatory review council, and I provide a response to the commenter, or we hold this package, make a revision, send it out for public comment again. If you decide to take the second course of action, what I would strongly encourage, however, is that the behavior analyst rulemaking package still move forward to GRC, to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, and we not hold it and wait for the psychologist rule package to catch up to it. If you have any questions about that explanation, I'm happy to address them.
Mr. Diner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is, if we decide to make any changes based on the comment to Section 207, can we just hold 207 and let everything else go to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council? And if not, why not?
Madam Chair, Mr. Diner, it's my understanding we can't, because it is a package. So we can't sort of hold that rule back, that single rule back, and move the rest of it forward.
Ms. Pecknon, my question would be around, you know, that language. I believe we added to the behavior analyst rules as well. So even though the comment was made as it pertained to psychologists, if we were to make edits, would that also be something that we would want to consider edits on that one too, which would hold both packets back?
Madam Chair, yeah, you have the discretion as the rulemaking agency to hold that or to apply the same change or modification to the behavior analyst rule package as you do for the psychologist. There's nothing stopping you from making a corollary change, in other words.
I have another question. I like the addition of language. I think language is important to include and ethnicity, because race is, you know. I'm wondering about two. I'm just raising this question, and I think I must have missed the meeting where we had this discussion. But on number two, the online jurisprudence, are we going to change that tool every 2 years?
Madam Chair, Dr. Malat, the tool will be updated when the content changes. So the content being, of course, statutes and rules. So our agreement with the vendor for this tool is that at least on an annual basis, we will be evaluating whether the content, the questions, the blueprint, the outline are still accurate, and make modifications if they aren't. So every time we have statutory changes, every time we have rule changes, it will compel us to go back to the tool and update it to reflect those changes.
Okay, because that's a lot of hours for, you know, this, because there's so many other things that people need to also focus on.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Denner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have some procedural questions, and then I have some substantive things that I want to comment on. But I'll start with the procedural questions. So I think, and based on what Ms. Pakkanen said, if the board has discretion to make, as a rulemaking body, to make changes to both the psychology portion and the behavior analyst portion, then that indicates to me that we could, in theory, we should be able to send the rest of the rulemaking package forward and just hold the continuing education sections back if we feel that they need to be changed. And then, you know, there's additional public input that needs to happen and has to essentially go through the rulemaking process again. My concern is we are allowing this one tiny portion of a bigger package to hold the rest of the package back. And then, you know, that makes me question the sort of motives of the sort of poison pill approach to holding good rules back just because there's this one contentious rule that we haven't been able to agree on, or even the fact that there was a positive comment to a rule is holding the rest of the package back. So I guess that is my concern. I would prefer, if possible, that the rest of the rule package go forward. And if the board thinks that there is more work to be done on the continuing education sections, then we can just hold those sections back. Because my understanding is we got exemption from the governor for rulemaking on everything. So, I understand the rulemaking as a package sort of understanding of how these things proceed. But if we got approval from the governor's office, exemption from rulemaking moratorium for everything, including continuing education, then I would argue that we have authority to hold back just these two sections and let everything else go forward. And we can still operate under that exemption from rulemaking moratorium to then do something with the continuing education sections. Thank you.
Ms. Shreve? Okay. Dr. Kett, oh, sorry, Ms. Shree, did you have?
You know what, I do think though that whatever we decide, it should be consistent between the two different groups, whether psychology or the analyst. I mean, it should be, I think, a consistent decision on what the training should be, the topic.
Thank you. Ms. Galvin.
I believe there were some others ahead of me, but I would like to raise one issue with the board. Under 411025, that's part of the statutory scheme relating to rulemaking. The agency is prohibited from submitting to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council a rule that is substantially different from the proposed rule that is originally, you know, offered by the agency. What this individual, this psychologist from the public comment has suggested is, you know, you're talking about 4 hours, including race, age, sex, gender identification. And she's suggesting adding ethnicity, language, and culture to the list. I would argue that when you're talking about, you know, diversity and you list out age, gender, sex, identification, ethnicity, language, and culture probably would not fall under the definition that this is substantially different. And also in my day job, I act as rules attorney for the Attorney General's office. And we can run this by, if you adopt these changes, we can run it by GERC to see if it would be acceptable to them so we don't go down the road and have to start over. But Heidi, I think that there's a really good argument that just adding ethnicity, language, and culture, and I don't mean just adding them, but adding them does not make the rule substantially different. In determining whether something is substantially different, you have to look at the extent to which all persons affected by the rule should have understood that the published proposed rule would affect their interests. So I don't think that, you know, that applies. They still have to take diversity. We're just articulating some of the categories that could fit that description. The extent to which the subject matter of the rule or the issues determined by that rule are different from the subject matter issues involved in the published proposed rule. So the issues are still the same. We're just making the laundry list a little bit longer and more descriptive or inclusive, and the extent to which the effects of the rule differ from the effects of the published proposed rule. So the outcome, the effects of the rule are still the same. We're just adding to a list of categories that would be acceptable. So I think if it's the board's desire, I'm hearing some consensus that this public comment has raised a legitimate issue. And if there's consensus to add those terms, it wouldn't be a substantial change. And that's the reason that they allow public comment, is so those affected by the rule could comment to the board that, hey, did you think about this? And this is exactly what this person has done. And that's why the rule allows changes, or the statute allows changes to take place, as long as they're not substantially different from what was proposed in the beginning, then you don't have to start over. So after all of that, if you are inclined to accept these public comments and make those revisions, then I would urge you to do so. We could not make those changes formally, or we could vote to accept those changes contingent upon kind of an informal opinion from GERC staff as to whether they would constitute a substantial change.
Thank you, Ms. Kelvin. Dr. Caterino?
Yeah, I agree, but I also thought, as a second, in case they do think it is substantial, could we just say included but not limited to? Just put "but not limited to," because that would be less of a change if they do believe those changes would be substantial. And I just also wondered how long a setback this would be if we have to redo things. How many months would this take to get reviewed again?
Sounds like Ms. Galvin gave us a solution if we accept the changes.
Yeah, just giving a part B, I understand that, but it would be like a second part in case they thought it was substantial.
Might be a few months delay, Heidi. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Madam Chair, at a minimum, I'd have to look at the rule that prescribes the timeframes for public comment and publishing and so forth, but it must be at least 60 days, perhaps longer. So that's the time that we would, I don't want to characterize it necessarily this way, but that's the time that we would, you know, lose or would slow us down. So if I may, Ms. Galvin, thank you very much for finding that statute. I wasn't aware of that provision, and I'm happy to check with GIRC staff to see if that change meets that test. My only other suggestion might be that a substantive policy statement could be adopted, you know, sort of concurrent with the finalization of the rule. And the substantive policy statement could articulate what I remember hearing from the board, which is diversity is it's a topic, it's broad. There are several subtopics that would fall under that, you know, we couldn't possibly list exhaustively in a rule, and that the CE audit committee would construe that rule to include anything that fits the definition of diversity, but not necessarily listed in that rule. So that was my other suggestion to offer.
Thank you. Dr. Meyer, did you have something to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Ms. Galvin addressed it. If I understood that correctly, if this isn't considered a substantial change, it does not have to be reposted and go back out for public comment?
That's correct.
Okay. So I think that we absolutely should include these terms. I think it was a great suggestion. I agree that it does not substantially change what we're trying to accomplish here. So I guess I'd make a motion to accept those changes and confirm that it's not a substantial, I guess, after confirmation that it's not a substantial change, then accept those. And if it is a substantial change, then it'd need to come back to the board.
Mr. Diner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a comment to make, but there is a motion. So unless there is a second, I'm prevented from making a comment.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Discussion. Mr. Diner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I've said this before, and I want to say it again for purposes of creating a record. I was initially opposed to adding any mandatory diversity training as part of continuing education in the board's rules, and I continue to be opposed to it. And there are several reasons I could give for the record. I think it undermines the legitimacy of the board. The very purpose of having a state licensing, occupational licensing board for psychologists and behavior analysts is the premise that these professions are based on some scientific grounding. And if we add to our rules this sort of, you know, fleeting wokeness that has come up in today's culture, we are undermining the premise that these professions are based on scientific grounding. And instead, we are injecting into the profession this notion that, you know, feelings or wokeness or current trends are what affects the practice of psychology and behavior analysts. And the other problem with having diversity, mandatory diversity continuing education as part of the rules is that we don't have, according to our Arizona Constitution, we do not have affirmative action or diversity in this state. It's Article 2, Section 36. So I would be very skeptical of any mandatory diversity training for any profession. I mean, we just happen to regulate psychologists and behavior analysts. It's a small part of the overall, you know, group of professionals that are licensed in the state of Arizona. And we should not fall for this sort of a poison pill that is being injected into our rules by a small section of the interest groups in the state. Thank you.
I'd like to comment.
Dr. Malat?
Yeah, Mr. Dinar and members of the board, diversity training is a really big part of our education. It's actually mandated. It's actually now included in all our accreditation requirements. And, as is ethics, certain very essential aspects. And it's important that our psychologists are aware and can provide the best services possible. So even though our state constitution may know, our professions have really emphasized this training. And I think as board members, we need to ensure that our psychologists are providing services that take into account culture, language, and all of those aspects. So I just wanted to make that comment.
I agree, Dr. Malat, and I was just going to make that same point that it's part of the APA accreditation that you offer a course in diversity. So the people graduating now from accredited programs have to have that. But this would be helpful to people that psychologists that didn't have that in their original programs. So I think it is the standard of the profession as from our main professional group that we have diversity training.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer.
And just to build on that, multicultural competency has been a component of our profession for decades. This is not a new woke thing. Everybody else is catching up to it, but this has always been a part of psychology and needs to be emphasized. And we've previously emphasized different topics that were seen as being important in psychologists needing additional training and focus. We previously focused on domestic violence and abuse. We've removed that because there's additional topics to cover. This can progress as well, but to say that this is contentious, I would suggest is only from one member. We've pretty much been on board with this, and it's a substantial component of our field.
Thank you. Dr. Davey?
Of many of the board members here in that I don't believe this is a political stance by this board in any way, shape, or form. This is something that has been part of training programs for quite some time, and it is something that is required to actually engage with the state in treatment planning. We have cultural competency requirements with all of our access providers, and so again, this is not something that's just coming out of the headlines of the news. This is something that, again, is becoming the standard of training and the standard of care for individuals that are charged with supporting some of our most vulnerable members and citizens in the state of Arizona. And so I, for one, feel that this is a critical step forward. It can be revisited later as we kind of ramp up and get people to the level of understanding and training that's required to be successful in providing services in our state. But at this time, I think that it is something that we're not only seeing here in the state, but we're seeing it from our national certifying bodies as well as something that we need to continue to promote, and particularly with our new younger workforce, make sure that we are engaging them and encouraging them and educating them.
Oh, Dr. Davey, I think we lost you. Dr. Stewart?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I absolutely do believe that psychologists need to have a sensitivity to the clientele and populations they serve. I am against adding additional language because it seems to be more restrictive, even though it's couched in terms of, as an example given, it can be A, B, and C or other. I think that it is still restrictive. I like the broader point of view, the domestic violence and the things that have dropped out of the board requirement is just another example of you add greater specificity, and then as the board moves on, as society moves on, things drop out. So why are we doing this when it may drop out in the future? Why build in these restrictions? I'm against greater restrictions. I like the broad category of language that's in the current rules.
Dr. Davey, I think you might be back with us. Did you have anything else to add?
No, sorry. I think at the end, I was just saying thank you.
Okay, thank you. And just for clarification, the motion is to add additional language. It's not the motion to add the diversity training to the rules has already been passed by the board in a previous meeting. So this is looking to add the additional language as suggested. And I just wanted to reiterate with my colleagues as far as, you know, in health and human services, when it comes, especially in working with humans, part of the scientific equation is learning history. And that does have to include many of those components. And so I do agree with my colleagues there. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? I'm going to go ahead and do roll call because it seems like there might be a need. Again, the motion on the table is to add in to the language the additional examples of ethnicity, language, and culture into what has already been approved by the board, provided that GIRC says that it's not going to be an issue because it's not a substantial change. So that is the motion. Ms. Poe, can you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
No.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
No.
Mr. Nguyen?
Yes.
We have 7 yeses, 2 noes. Motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. That was a great discussion. I always learn in those discussions. So thank you. All right. We will now move to agenda item number 7. The time is now 9:18. So we're going to move to the first section of timed items on this agenda scheduled for review on or after 9 a.m. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38-431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. This is going to be the informal interview of Dr. Jerry Gentry in case number 2207. Dr. Gentry, if you are present, if you could please turn on your camera, which you have. Are you represented today by legal counsel?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Would you please take a moment to introduce yourself, and will your legal counsel also be able to turn on their video and introduce themselves?
Good morning. This is Brett and Barbara. I'm sorry, I'm having some IT issues, but okay. I am certainly here and present. I am counsel for Dr. Gentry, and I can see all of you. And that was a great discussion, by the way. I just wanted to thank you for this opportunity for the informal interview. This is my client, Dr. Gentry.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Gentry. Can you please just state your name for the record?
Oh, Dr. Jerry Gentry.
Thank you. I am Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson, Chair of the Board. I'll call on each board member to introduce themselves and to state their specific role on the board. Starting with Dr. Stewart.
I'm Joe Stewart. I'm a psychologist.
Dr. Davey. Oh, we do not have audio again on you, Dr. Davey. I will come back. Oh, there you are. Nope, we lost you again. I will come right back to you, Dr. Davey. Dr. Catarino?
Member of the board and secretary of the board.
Mr. Dinar.
Good morning. Adi Dinar. I'm a public member of the board.
Mr. Nguyen.
Todd Nguyen. I'm a public member at large on the board.
Thank you. Ms. Shreve.
Good morning. Tamara Shreve. I'm also a public member at large.
Thank you. Dr. Malat.
Hi, I'm Ramona Malat, and I'm a psychologist member of the board.
Dr. Meyer.
Hi, I'm Matt Meyer, psychologist member.
Thank you. And Dr. Davey.
We'll see if this is working. Is that better?
Gotcha.
Okay, sorry. I apologize, everyone. That should solve our problem. Brian Davey, behavior analyst, vice chair.
Thank you. Also present are the members of board staff and Jean Galvin, the board's attorney. This proceeding is being recorded, so everyone must speak loudly and clearly, and only one person is permitted to speak at a time. Because we are on video, I do ask that anybody who is not speaking, please be sure to mute your line so that we don't have additional background noise. Dr. Gentry, you've been noticed of the matters to be discussed today and possible actions the board may take to at an informal interview. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Board members have read all the materials and any additional submissions. If it is necessary to refer to clients or patients during the interview, please do so by initials only. I will read the allegations from the informal interview notice, and then we will interview you. In complaint number 2207, it is alleged that you engaged in unprofessional conduct, including but not limited to possible violations of the following. ARS 32-206116C, making or using statements of a character tending to deceive or mislead. ARS 32-206116J, making a fraudulent or untrue statement to the board or its investigators, staff, or consultants. ARS 32-206116M, using fraud, misrepresentation, or deception to obtain or attempt to obtain a psychology license or to pass or attempt to pass a psychology licensing exam or in assisting another person to do so. ARS 32-206116O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. The Association Ethical Principle of Psychologists and Code of Conduct, ARS 32-206116DD, violating an ethical standard adopted by the board as it pertains to Section 3.05, Multiple Relationships. Dr. Gentry, I will now swear you in. Under penalty or perjury, do you swear to tell the whole truth? Tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. To begin the interview, we will start with a summary of the case by me, as I am the lead board member on this case. Let me switch my notes real quick. Dr. Gentry the board staff received a complaint from Dr. Gentry's employer, Centrion. Dr. Gentry's employer alleged that they had terminated employment on August 31st due to a revocation of security clearance by the Arizona Department of Corrections. Circumstances of the complaint are related to security clearance being required by the Department of Corrections. As a component of the complaint, I apologize, I'm still pulling up my notes. They're a little lagged. Dr. Gentry was contacted by a coworker after working and I apologize. My notes are skipping around here. All right. Complaint. I had moved to licensee. All right. Due to the revocation of certification, Dr. Gentry was termed from her employment. The complaint alleges that I don't know why it's skipping around. I do apologize. Oh, here we go. that the nature of the revocation of the Department of Corrections security clearance was related to concerns of potential fraternization with a prison inmate. The complaint alleges that the prison inmate had access to inappropriate photos that belonged to Dr. Gentry. Apologize. I don't know what is happening here. I'll go with the deputy warden was notified that the individual had access to these photos. While they were unable to produce the photos, they were able to produce components of the photos, of which Dr. Gentry was able to confirm they did belong to her. However, she was unsure how the inmate received them. The inmate did accuse Dr. Gentry of supplying information to both personal information and contraband to other inmates, though no evidence of that was provided during the investigation. Due to the nature of the photos and the access of the photos to the inmates, Dr. Gentry was termed from her employment. Dr. Gentry does state that she... I apologize. Dr. Gentry resigned prior to the termination as she had not heard back from them as it related to the status of the investigation. She stands by her response that there was no sexual misconduct, and again, that she was unaware of how the inmate was able to access the photos. But that they were possibly brought in on accident. And when she realized that they were missing, it had already been too late. During the course of this investigation, it was also identified that Dr. Gentry was fired from a previous employer. She did not disclose this termination on her original application, nor did she disclose this termination on the information or on the application provided to Centrion. Dr. Gentry states that this is due to being under a non-disclosure agreement, of which we did have access to the non-disclosure agreement. We did review the information, and it was determined that the board did have the ability to access the employment records from the California agency in which she was also terminated from employment. During review of those employment records, it is noted that the purpose of the employment was also related to allegations of multiple relationships with a patient or a former patient, in which a prison inmate and Dr. Gentry were noted to have been having dinner and drinks together. Dr. Gentry replied that they happened to see each other at the same restaurant and acknowledged that she did have a drink, but mostly drank water, and that was just the nature of that interaction, and she was unsure as to why the supervisee reported it as more. I again apologize. I don't know, Ms. Michelson, do you have anything else to add? I don't know why my computer screen's just skipping, so I apologize.
Sure. Just to briefly recap, the board did an initial review a few months ago on April 8th. At that time, the members did express concern that Dr. Gentry did not disclose her termination from Sharp or Future on her licensure application and checked no to this background question. It was also discussed that she did not disclose the sharper future determination on her employment application with Centurion. At that time, the board members expressed that these allegations are serious and that there appeared to be boundaries violated with clients at multiple employments. After deliberation, the board did ask Dr. Gentry if she'd be willing to enter into an interim consent agreement for supervision that would take place while the complaint is pending. At that time, Dr. Gentry did agree and signed the interim consent agreement, which she's been under supervision with by her current supervisor at her employer, Dr. Stephanie Kuhl. The board did move to conduct an informal interview, which is taking place today. At that time, the board did recommend, I believe it was 5 different violations, which are notated in the report on page 19. Just to add, one of the things that the board members did request me to clarify is that if the Sharper Future employer had filed a complaint with the California board, at that time she was licensed as a psychological associate. That's for a period of 1 year. We did confirm with the Sharper Futures attorney that a complaint was filed, so the California board was not notified. So that is some of the information that I did obtain, but please let me know if there are any questions.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Dr. Caterino?
Do we have any information on the timeline of when she resigned and when she was terminated? Do we have those dates exactly from this current most recent employment?
Yeah, Dr. Caterino, we do. I don't know, Ms. Michelson, if you can pull them up. I believe it was just a few days. There was not any formal documentation provided to us about the termination. And so the only information we have is that Dr. Gentry resigned. And then we do have the complainant states that, no, it was a termination due to revocation. And I think the concern on that was that because the employer was a subcontractor, I think they were working through what to do in the fact that the Department of Education or the Department of Corrections had revocated her security clearance, but her employer hadn't moved forward with whether or not to place her in another job or to terminate her. And so there was like a month lag. Ms. Michelson, I don't know if you have those dates or the page reference.
That is correct. And to answer your question, Dr. Caterino, I did obtain her personnel record from Centurion. There was no additional information there regarding the end of employment. What it appears is after Dr. Gentry's first interview with the Department of Corrections regarding the inmate allegations, she then applied for a position with Desert Sage, which is her current employer where she's working at now.
Okay, because it was unclear to me, you know, exactly when the employer said you're terminated versus when she resigned. So thank you.
Dr. Wilson, am I able to offer some clarity?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm Dr. Michaela Reese Williams. I am the former supervisor for Dr.
Actually, can you hold on 1 second?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I apologize. I'm having some tech issues. So I actually will be interviewing and giving you an option to provide us some information as well. And so if you could hold on just 1 second, and then we'll get to you. I'm going to restart my computer in the meantime as well. But so I will get to you, MR, in just 1 second. Dr. Caterino, if you are okay with it. Except for Ms. Michael, unless you want Ms. Michelson to pull up the reference of that page, we can ask MR for those details when we get to that point.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Davis Wilson, should we take a 5-minute break? Would that help?
It can. I switch devices, so I can keep going as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I switched devices so that I could restart and get back in. So we can keep going as well. All right. Dr. Gentry, did you receive the investigative record in this case? And did you review it for your appearance today?
I did.
Thank you. Do you or your legal counsel wish to make any opening remarks?
I don't at this time.
All right. If your legal counsel, Mr. Barber, if you would like to unmute yourself. All right. Hearing none. We will now move to MR. MR, I will swear you in. Under penalty or perjury, do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. And we also have SW present today.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. I will now swear you in as well. Should you supply any additional testimony today? So under penalty or perjury, do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. All right, MR, would you do you wish to make any remarks at this time?
Yes, I just wanted to offer a little bit of clarity, if I may, just regarding the termination. So on August 31st, 2021, that is when the Department of Corrections walked her off complex. Her employment is contingent upon security clearance. So because Department of Correction pulled her clearance due to allegations, her employment is automatically terminated at that time. You're right in what you were saying that, you know, because we're contracted through the Department of Corrections, that is why there, you know, there are some gaps in communication. However, onboarding documents everyone signs as part of their employment is that your employment is contingent upon your ability to pass security clearance. Since her clearance was revoked, so was her employment. And the only document Centurion was able to issue was that her employment ended on the 31st, and which makes it, you know, a bit unclear as to when and how she may have received that information. But what is clear is that because her security clearance was pulled, so was her employment. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any additional remarks to make it as it pertains to the complaint itself?
No, the information you have is correct.
Perfect. Thank you. Board members, do we have any questions for MR or SW? All right. Hearing none at this point, if Dr. Gentry or Mr. Barber have any questions for the complainants, you may address them to me and I will, if they're appropriate, address them to the complainants. Do you have any questions for MR or SW?
I have no questions.
Neither do I.
Thank you. The board will now proceed with questions for Dr. Gentry. Does any board member have questions for Dr. Gentry? Right. Hearing none.
Chair.
Oh, Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Gentry. Could you clarify your understanding of what you were and were not able to disclose about your previous employment and why you did not include your prior termination on the license, the application for licensure in Arizona?
Yeah, so with the NDA in place, I was under the impression I was not to discuss my employment other than to provide dates of employment as well as supervisor information. That was my understanding.
So getting a non-disclosure agreement would allow you to keep off any number of things from the application, such as criminal history or employment or anything? I mean, I'm confused why that would be excluded.
I guess I'm sorry. I don't really understand the question.
Okay. Okay. So you still believe that you should not have included your prior termination on the licensure application because of a non-disclosure agreement?
Now I know otherwise, and I understand that the non-disclosure agreement was about the wages and that I was not discussed that particular case, and so I now know I should have reported it on my application for licensure.
Okay, and all right, that's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Ms. Shreve.
Thank you. I got a few questions. I know we've had these questions before, and this is we've seen you prior, but just to confirm or maybe refresh your memories, the issue were some photos of yourself that were allegedly found within the prison among some inmates. Can you just explain again, I know you've been at a past meeting, how the photos potentially got there, if you have any, how the inmates potentially received them, and if you could address that.
Okay. In terms of, when I found out that, I was told by the inmate he had photos, kind of dawned on me because I had previously, approximately 2 months earlier, had printed some off along with picking up some supplies, energy drinks, whatnot, and throwing them into my bag. I had forgotten about them. I assumed maybe I had lost them or accidentally thrown them away when the inmate told me that he had photos of me. That's kind of when it dawned on me that I potentially had accidentally brought them into the prison. As far as how he would have gotten them, that I do not know. I would just be guessing.
So when you go into a prison, are you allowed to take your personal belongings? I've never entered one, so I know that there's processes, do you lock your stuff? Would that have been locked in a locker? Did you have it in a bag that you take to your meetings? I mean, could you maybe explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So during the time that I was working there, we used a large, clear, see-through bag. You were allowed to bring in your supplies, anything of the sort, not contraband or anything like that. You go up to the security line, you walk through the metal detector, they search through your bag and then also run it through a scanner. And then you gather your belongings and then you proceed to the next gate where you do more or less the same thing without going through the scanner. You personally do, but your bag is just searched by another officer again. As far as locking anything up, I believe there were lockers up front for guns and whatnot, but that was never anything that I needed to use.
And when you say you printed them off, are you saying were they printed off on an 8.5 by 11, or were they printed off on like a photo type of paper?
Like a photo from Walgreens, a 4 by whatever the size is, the standard.
Nice. So they were actual photos printed at Walgreens, not like something you do off your computer. Is that correct? All right. And so you don't have any idea how those inmates could have gotten possession with them?
As I said, I would be guessing, but there were inmates who had special privileges in terms of, working in the areas we were working, whether custodial or whatnot. Other officers also could easily access. So I'm not sure who would have gotten them and dispersed them.
And is there any, your previous employment, there seems to have been some issues with the relationship with, I forget the wording. Can you explain, now there's this issue with the inmates here. If you see correlation, if you see an issue?
I see the issue in certain ways. Everything has been presented. And as far as everything that was reported from my previous employer, it was based off of just so-and-so said this, so-and-so said this, a kind of a back and forth, and it summarized. And I had my previous employment prior to the prison at Arizona Center for Change. I had included a little synopsis of what had happened and then mentioned that I was not to discuss it further because of the charges or pending charges in the legal case. But in terms of, I went and stopped at this restaurant to let traffic die down after work. I got some iced tea and water, chips and salsa, and my client came in. He saw me, sat down, he ordered food and drinks. And I had actually been texting with a coworker who then came and met with us. We were there for about an hour and we all went separate ways afterwards.
And what have you learned from this process?
Transparency is key. There's never enough training and knowledge. You can always get more. And when in doubt, consult, 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 consult. Supervisors, colleagues, and as well as in terms of running into clients outside of any type of practice, you know, addressing that ahead of time before the situation kind of presents itself. And then if it does present itself, continue to follow the ethical principles and, you know, acknowledge them only when acknowledged and then leave, not to continue to converse or spend any more time than a hello and then keep going kind of.
All right. Thank you. I don't have any more questions, Chair.
Madam Chair and board members, if I may just add one comment for one point I wanted to clarify. Regarding the circumstances surrounding her termination at Sharper Future with this particular client, I just wanted to note when I had reviewed the record, the information that she relayed to the employer was slightly different than what she reported to on her application with her next employer, AZ Center for Change. The story was not completely consistent. What she reported to Sharper Future is that she ran into the client at a bar. They had a drink together. However, in the version that was reported on her employment application at AZ Center for Change, she reported that she was at a restaurant having a meal, ran into them there, but there was no mention of having a drink together. So that was the one thing that I observed when I reviewed the information.
Thank you. Additional questions for Dr. Gentry?
Could we, this is...
Dr. Ma?
Yeah, could I ask her to clarify the two versions of the story that Ms. Michelson just spoke about? Michelson?
Absolutely. So the version from my previous employer in California was not in my words. It was, I suppose, his summary of what he gathered. I wouldn't necessarily agree with everything that was written by him. However, like what I reported to my next employer here in Arizona, those were in my own words, in my own handwriting.
So what did happen? Do you mind sharing that?
No, not at all. Like I said, I was waiting for traffic to die down. Typically, it could take up to 2 hours to get home during rush hour. So I stopped and I was just trying to wait for it to die down, having a drink, chips and salsa. And he was a parolee, had come in, he had seen me, he had said hello, he sat down and we started conversing and he ordered food and drinks. And then I was texting another coworker. She showed up, like I said, she spent about an hour, I believe it was. And then we all went our separate ways.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Dr. Millett, I don't know if you want to ask her, according to that coworker, Dr. Gentry left with the parole. Yeah, and they did not know. The co-worker indicated that you left with the parolee. Could you describe how the meeting ended and the departure?
So in terms of why she said this, I'm not sure. Again, this was based off of just what the supervisor had written in his report. We had all walked out together and said goodbye and all went our separate ways.
Was there a time where, you know, when you say separate ways, could there have been a perception that you, you know, say with the coworker went, I mean, I'm just trying to envision the circumstances.
I mean, I guess there could always be a perception. There was, we all had gone into our own cars. I'm not sure if she was still there when I got in and officially drove away. I'm not sure if the client was even still there at that time either. So if she left before I'd actually gone into my car, that could have been where the misperception came in.
Okay.
Additional questions for Dr. Gentry? Give everyone just a moment. All right, hearing no additional questions for MR and SW, do either of you have any additional remarks that you would like to make?
Not at this time, thank you.
Thank you.
Board chair to receive legal advice?
Sure.
I will make a motion that we go into executive session for legal advice.
And I will second that. Oh, okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. I think we have everybody back. I wanted to take just a moment, MR, if you would not mind. I do have a question for you. If you're back with us, I know we disappeared for a little bit. Are you present, MR?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Can you describe for me what the policies and procedures are as far as security goes when it pertains to bringing your personal belongings into the prison, where they're stored, what that process looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. When you arrive to the prison, everybody, you know, you take everything out of your pockets. We're not allowed to bring in our personal phones. You have to have a clear bag, as Dr. Gentry described earlier. There's a security officer who goes through your belongings to make sure you're not bringing in any contraband. They then put it through a conveyor belt, where on the other side, there's a monitor similar to the airport to make sure there's no metal items in there. Once you get through that clearance process, you go through, you know, a regular, like regular gates. However, if you're going onto a yard, you go through another set of security where they do the same thing, essentially, minus the conveyor belt with the monitor. Security just goes through your bag again to make sure you're not bringing in anything, any metal, you know, any, you know, substance, things like that. Once you get to your yard, you then have an office where you store your belongings. And then when you're going on to the actual units to see the inmates, you're just bringing necessary items, whether it be a clipboard, paper, pen, things of that nature. But your personal belongings remain in the office.
Thank you. Is the office a shared office?
Yes. Well, it's shared with other mental health staff. So at the time would have been another therapist. But anytime you leave the office, it should be locked.
Okay. And when you
can I just ask, do inmates have those who are on more privileges have access to the office?
No. Mm-mm.
Do the detention officers have access to the office?
They do not.
Okay. And when you describe, because I've seen not in security context for prison, but when you say a prison guard goes through the bag, is it that they just quickly look at it? Do they have something that they move through? How thorough does that look? Let's say there's envelopes or you know, things in there. Is it just a quick look through and then check for metal? What does that look like?
Quite honestly, it depends on who's working that day. You know, they may go through it with a fine tooth comb, literally taking everything out, or they may kind of just push some things around and then put it through the conveyor belt. And just for clarity, I just want to go back to the question that was asked regarding who has access. Inmates and officers should not have access, but of course, we can't say with certainty, but mental health staff are the only ones who should have keys to our office, obviously, because we want to make sure everything is HIPAA compliant. So officers, as far as we know, should not have access to the offices.
And in the office, there's also locked drawers, cabinets, the ability to lock your personal belongings?
Yes.
Okay. And the current policy is lock up your purse, even though it's clear, to lock up those belongings?
the current policy is to lock it in the office. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the additional locked, drawers or anything, but it is to leave it in the office.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Stewart.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. A question for MR. As a part of your onboarding process, does that include statements about contraband being brought into the facility?
Yes, it says that we cannot bring contraband into the facility. It names items that cannot be brought in, cell phone, drugs, alcohol, things of that nature.
Is it listed in the onboarding paperwork and process to work in the Department of Corrections that if you violate certain things that you are automatically separated from employment, you're automatically terminated?
I believe the wording is a bit vague in that security has the ability to complete an investigation. And if they believe that you're a risk to security, your clearance will be terminated.
If your clearance is terminated, does that mean that your employment is terminated at the same time?
Yes.
Thank you.
Can I add a piece to that information?
Yes,
SW. I just wanted to add that we also, every new employee, obviously I've done it myself, but I'm part of the new employee orientation, and every employee also has Department of Corrections training, like in person and via online, where they go over all of this information as well. Of course, in addition to onboarding documents, they also have, training on site, and they actually go through examples and show videos and the whole nine yards spent on this area of what not to bring in and what's inappropriate and, that whole area as well.
Thank you.
Do we have, I guess for MR or SW, my other question is, once an employee is walked off of a site, and services are revoked, what are the policies for communication, continued communication with the employee? Because it seemed like there was still continued, hey, we're still looking into this type conversations. Do you guys have policies around notifying other people, hey, this individual is no longer employed here, contact us or redirect them? What does that look like?
So once an employee is walked off complex, I am no longer to have contact with them. So Dr. Gentry was texting me. However, because her security was revoked and, from my understanding, I'm no longer, supervising her, all communication would have gone through HR. I feel like there was a second part of your question.
I think that answered it for me.
Okay.
And to help clarify this, SW, I know we've stated we're contractors and we're working we're working in their house, right? Department of Corrections. So that process initiates where representatives from DOC communicate with Centurion about the situation. So that's maybe where that gap is, because we're in their house and they're pulling the clearance. So then they need to communicate with Centurion about what's going on. But either way, as MR has mentioned, once the clearance is pulled, she's not able to perform any job duties. So therefore, she's not able to do anything on site. Therefore, her employment is, starting that termination process.
Thank you. Do we have additional questions for MR or SW? All right, hearing none, Dr. Gentry, I'm going to open it back up for questions for you. Board members, do we have questions for Dr. Gentry? Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Dr. Gentry, could you explain, were you terminated from Sharper Image, or did you resign?
From Sharper Future?
Sharper Future.
That's fine. I was terminated.
And what was the reason for the termination?
As it was written, with overfamiliarity, boundary violation, I believe that's the wording.
Okay. And there's question about termination versus resignation with Centurion, right? But what was the reason for you losing security clearance?
When I spoke with the warden after I had spoken with the investigators, he had said due to the threats made by the inmate, as well as like the photos, he saw it as a security issue and he couldn't let me on the complex. But then he had stated Centurion may have another location and other duties for you somewhere else, leading me to believe that it was just for the Lewis complex, that prison specifically.
So you were a security threat?
He had security concerns. I don't know if that he said due to the threats made by the inmate towards myself. And then however they got the photos, he saw that as a security issue.
Okay. And have there been any other positions from which you've been terminated or you resigned in lieu of termination?
No.
Okay. How many... Okay. So my next question is about your initial application for licensure in Arizona. You were licensed in August of 2020. When did you submit your... Do you know the date that you submitted your application?
I believe it was early January of 2020, but COVID and everything kind of delayed everything.
Okay. And when were you terminated from Centurion?
Terminated or resigned. That was end of August, beginning of September of 21.
Okay. And when were you terminated from Sharper Future?
June of 2019.
Okay.
Just to clarify, Dr. Meyer, her licensure application was received in January of 2020, so approximately 6 months after her termination from Sharper Future.
Okay. And then when did you submit your renewal, your current renewal application?
I believe that was after the first meeting in February of this year.
Okay. That is correct. It was received the day after the CSC reviewed this case. So in February, I believe, 24th.
Okay. And so on neither of those, neither the original application nor the renewal, did you report that you had been terminated, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I have inquired about the Centurion aspect of it. But
there was no mention of Sharper
Future. Right.
Okay. That's all I can handle at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Davey? You are on mute.
All right. I just want to follow up on that. In terms of the application and looking at some of the documentation, you've stated to us multiple times that you believed that there's a section of your confidentiality settlement with Sharper or Sharper Futures and Centurion that prohibited you from disclosing information about your employment with them. Is that correct?
Correct.
And is that still your contention today that confidentiality statement would prohibit you from answering questions on an employment application. I think is question one on our application for licensure is question two. Is that still your belief? And is that your personal belief, or have you received legal counsel around that?
No, it is no longer my personal belief. And now I was informed that I can discuss everything other than what is in that agreement.
And in looking at that agreement, you know, I've noted that there's essentially four paragraphs with regard to the background of the agreement. And the agreement is really around, it looks to be wage disputes and essentially monies that may or may not have been owed to you. There is no discussion in the background of anything other than those particular labor issues. Is there other documentation we're missing that goes beyond what's in the background there with regard to those labor code sections that are listed?
No, it was just my misunderstanding. And I believe there's even in the email from, I think it's Trevor Future's lawyer, had even mentioned that, you know, the confusion and not being a lawyer, not understanding what I could and could not discuss.
And so there's nothing in this confidential agreement that was around interactions with other staff or inmates or anything like that. This was strictly around payment issues, strict and proper issues. So I appreciate that clarification because I believe and I was under the impression, but I'm wrong, in some of our earlier conversations that the confidentiality statement was actually precluding you from speaking to something that may have been outside of just a labor wages dispute. And so I appreciate you clarifying that. Having not been able to see the full document because it's fully redacted, I wonder if it would interest me to know, I'm guessing you have the unredacted version that you have executed and signed. What statement in there made you believe that this was okay to omit, you know, essentially in the two-party agreement, an agreement between you and an ex-employer? What sort of language in there would lead one to believe that you would not disclose this to a regulatory body or a potential employer?
There is a line, I don't have it in front of me, something along the lines of non-disclosure in future employment, you'll refer to whoever the name is and they will provide the dates that you provided services, and that was the extent of it in terms of what they would disclose. And so that kind of is where I guess I got what I was allowed to disclose. I'm not sure if that's in the redacted portion or not.
If I may, Dr. Davey, just to clarify the record, you said that this is a two-party agreement. I would just like to point out to the board members that the version of the non-disclosure agreement that was provided by Dr. Gentry and her attorney does not contain the signature of Sharper Future. So I would take issue with the fact that this is a two-party agreement.
Sorry, what is proposed as a potential two-party agreement, I guess, between her and the employer is what I meant. Thank you.
It's not executed.
Yes, it's not executed. Okay, so, and then I want to move to what I'm, for the board, what is page 320 of our packet. It's where you are discussing in terms of a background check for future employment with another group prior to the date that's on the document, the redacted document that you saved or provided to us. You do disclose on page 320 that there are some issues going on with Sharper Future. In particular, you outlined the incident where I believe in this writing, your written statement is that you were at a restaurant eating and a client came into the restaurant and saw you. Client came over to the table and you sat down. Client ordered his food, you know, completed my food and drink. That was it. I left immediately. Client stayed at the restaurant. You kind of outline that. At the end of that, you state, though, that there is a current lawsuit pending towards Sharper Future and cannot discuss further. So here in this application, you are disclosing that there was a disciplinary discussion between you and Dr. Josh Craig, and that you are essentially looking to, there's a lawsuit pending around this. What's the difference between this application and our request for information on a license application?
I guess it was just shame and embarrassment. How do I explain this, especially when it's the allegations that's written by my previous employer and as well as in my version, and then just not really knowing and understanding, I suppose. And then I guess because I wasn't licensed in California, that's the only thing I could think in terms of why there would be a difference, why I didn't disclose it to the board, but I would for my employer.
Yeah, I for one can't figure out why you didn't disclose to the board either. And I think that's where I have some significant concerns with regard to your judgment and your behavior around that, around the application that you now have sitting in front of us, and that you are seeking to have approved on top of the investigation that we're engaged in right now. I have no other questions at this time. I'll let other board members engage.
This is Dr. Malott. Yeah, so as Dr. Davey pointed out, you know, you talk about your employment with Shopper Future in your Center for Change application, but you do not talk about Shopper Future in your Centurion application, and it's blank. You just showed one, even though the application included, I think, the last 10 years, if I'm not mistaken. Is there a reason you left it out, even though you had included it?
So there's actually, if you see, there's two parts. There is one part where it's my handwritten, where I actually did include the Shopper Future information. The other one was they had reached out to me, and that's how I originally got the job, to where I just sent a DocuSign. So it was already pre-filled, and you hit next to the next, and you sign everything. I guess that was an oversight on my part in terms of the previous employment. And I just assumed that Arizona Center for Change is the only thing listed because that was my only licensure. But then where I actually had written in my previous employment, I did include Shopper Future. I just did not disclose the termination.
Okay, so... yeah, that's kind of confusing. So can you tell me the reason why you left Shopper Image? No, the second one, Center for Change.
I was offered a position with Centurion.
Okay.
One thing I would like to clarify with respect to the employment application, page 238, scrolling down, I do see that Dr. Gentry did sign this application and signed a statement indicating that all information is accurate and correct. And the employment application specifically asked for employment in the last 10 years.
Yes.
Dr. Caterino?
Well, that was going to be my question of on the, why it was not listed on that application. So do you want to say anything else about that, Dr. Gentry?
As I previously stated, I mean, yes, it was signed at DocuSign, and for all of you are aware, when you get on, if you click next, that was, I think, should have gone back to review every single thing.
Okay.
It's like I did include it, I just did not include the termination when I was filling it out.
Well, I didn't have it listed at all. I didn't mean that you did include it. I'm sorry. I only saw the one job, Center for Change. I didn't see the other one, Shopper Future, listed.
Right. That was the one that was pre-filled and sent to me via DocuSign. And then I guess it's considered the background questionnaire, I believe is what it's titled as, where I included my previous employment.
Okay.
I do also want to note that Centurion also had her complete credentialing application. And there is a specific question on there that does ask about, are there any prior terminations? And she checked no to this question. And signed as well that this information was correct. And this is on page 235 of your file.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Meyer, did you have
it? Are you done, Dr. Caterina?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Gentry, going back to the Centurion and resignation versus termination, on page 89 of our documents, We have the report from the Arizona DOC office of the Inspector General. And it says, after investigating the allegation, evidence was found to support inappropriate behavior by Dr. Gentry. Dr. Gentry had her security clearance revoked and was terminated from employment with the Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry. So how does that fall in line with you saying it was a security risk, where this is specifically stating inappropriate behavior by you?
Okay, what, and I'm sorry, what page did you say?
Page 89.
Okay.
It's the Department of Corrections investigation report.
Okay, so there was no mention, as I stated, to me in terms of termination or anything like that. I was told I did my badge, my security clearance, and that was the extent of that.
Did you ever receive this report?
Or see I did this? Not. No, not until the first investigative report was given to me.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions?
I have a question for Dr. Gentry. Dr. Gentry, you know, you say you didn't include, you didn't know, but, you know, you are on the oath, and at some point were you afraid? And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but were you afraid because, oh, I'm going to get in trouble, I won't get this job? I'd really like you to speak, you know, and really share, what were your thoughts at the time when you were completing this application? Because we're getting a story here. I mean, I don't believe I'm hearing the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So I'd really like you to talk to that, because that's really important for a board to know that we can trust our psychologists that are out there.
Right. So as I mentioned, I mean, shame and embarrassment, and how do I explain everything that had happened? Absolutely, being afraid, being embarrassed to even have to explain anything, how much to disclose, what I could disclose. And aside from being confused, it was strong emotions, I suppose, that were, you know, guiding me towards not disclosing. If that answers your question.
So, yeah, I think you're getting closer to what I'm hoping this interview would have, you know, you could have shared with us, that you knew you were not completing those items. I mean, you left those items out. Is that correct?
Correct.
Because you knew there would be repercussions, there would be further investigations, you may not have received the job.
I suppose part of that, yes, as well as just the confusion with the non-disclosure agreement. That definitely was part of it, not just not getting a job, just having to explain myself and then potentially not getting a job.
Okay. And similarly, when you completed the licensure application, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for admitting it.
Dr. Gentry, I did have a question back on the photos and the security. Can you remind us, I think we've talked about this, what were the photos in? What kind of envelope were the photos in?
The standard when you go to Walgreens, the, I don't know, 5x7 or slightly larger, just small little envelope that they tuck them into when they give them to you. And then when I had gone through checkout, they were all in a bag that was then put into my clear bag, if that is how they were introduced into the prison.
Okay. And you would have left your bag in a room. Who would have had access to your bag?
Well, it is only supposed to be the other mental health professionals that I am working with. However, there were issues in terms of how many different keys there were. So, sometimes there were three of us working, but only two sets of keys. The door would have to be unlocked at times. And then there were times where only one of us would have a set of keys. Maybe one of the behavioral health technicians would have the other set because they would need to get onto the yard, and it had the different fees that mental health professionals would have to use in terms of the gates and the different doors, the restroom, that type of stuff. So really anyone could check out the keys, if that makes sense. Technically it should only be those who are working in that office, but that wasn't always the case.
Okay. Dr. Catarino.
Dr. Gentry, was there anything else that might have been taken, money or anything else of significance?
Not to my knowledge.
And the bag was clear, yet, you know, were you not able to see the Walgreens envelope?
I had bought, you know, previously, and this is all I'm just guessing in terms of I didn't have any intention of bringing them there or knowledge of them being there. I thought I had thrown them away. So when the inmate told me he had photos of me, I had to just assume that's what happened. I didn't remember seeing them at any point in time in my clear bag. If I had, I would have never brought them on. I would have just left them in my car or removed them from my car and brought them in the house.
Okay.
Mr. Nguyen?
Yeah, I think that just answered my question about, I guess it was beyond how the photos got disseminated, whether you thought that it was a lack of appropriate judgment bringing them in. But I guess your claim is that you didn't even know it was in the clear bag at the time.
Correct.
When did you realize they were missing?
Maybe 10 days after I printed them off, I had gone and I just thought maybe I threw them out with the bag at that time. And like I said, it wasn't until about 2 months later when I maybe it kind of clicked when he mentioned he had photos that maybe that's where they had gone.
So you didn't realize these photographs were missing? Were you worried?
No, not at all, because I just assumed that I had tossed them on accident because they're very thin. There wasn't that many. So I never did I even imagine that I had taken them to work. And then as soon as I became aware that that was a potential issue, I did go and report immediately to the warden. And then after also being threatened by the inmate with, you know, his attempts to extort me and thus starting this entire process.
And just to clarify for the record, what was your intention with the photos?
I had my first anniversary coming up and I was going to try and be creative for my husband in terms of like a collage for him and looking at different Pinterest things to, you know, make something for him. And as the first anniversary is paper.
Okay, but you did not recognize for 10 days that they were gone. So you had them printed, went and picked them up, had a project planned, put them aside. I just want to make sure I have the timeline correct. 10 days goes by, you're like, oh, I'm ready to do this. Well, can't find them, thought you threw them away.
Yeah, approximately 10 days. I wasn't in a rush. Our anniversary wasn't until October. So there's something I was going to be working on. I'm not very creative. And so it would have taken me time anyway. And so when I had the chance, when my husband wasn't around, that's when I went to look for them and noticed they were gone. So I didn't even go digging through the trash or anything because it had been several days.
Okay. Any additional questions for Dr. Gentry?
This is SW. I don't have a question, but I do have a comment.
Yeah, I do see that. And I will get to you in just one moment. Thank you for being patient. I want to make sure the board members don't have additional questions. Dr. Catarina?
I don't remember the number, but there were two statutes where you must be honest on your applications to the board for both initial application and renewal. So do you feel, Dr. Gentry, that you may have violated that statute on both occasions?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions? All right, hearing none, Dr. Gentry and Mr. Barber, do you have any additional statements or comments that you would like to make for the board?
Not at this time.
Nothing for me. Thank you.
Thank you. MR and SW, so SW, you have your hand raised. Would you like to make any additional comments to the board?
Yes, ma'am. I think it's important to also note that me and MR were the two individuals who also interviewed Dr. Gentry, and we always make it a point to ask about boundaries and, give examples of any situations where, boundaries were violated, just boundaries with patients. And of course, nothing was mentioned in the interview. We always just make it a point to ask that in the interview process, and nothing of the sorts came up in the interview process when we spoke to Dr. Gentry, as far as history or any prior issues with other places of employment or clients. Thank you.
Thank you. MR, did you want to add any additional information?
I have nothing else to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for being here. All right. Any questions for MR or SW by the board members? Hearing none, the board will now deliberate. Deliberations is a time for board members to discuss, so we won't have additional questions or any interruptions. We ask that everybody maintain on mute unless called upon. Is there anybody that would like to lead the deliberations? I know I'm the lead on the case, but I don't know if there's a psychologist member, perhaps Dr. Meyer.
I'd be happy to start, and then feel free to chip in. Thank you. I see two issues here. One is that Dr. Gentry has been terminated from two jobs because of boundary violations or inappropriate behavior with clients. That right there is a violation. But further, she has misrepresented the facts about these two jobs and terminations on two license applications and multiple job applications, which is another violation. And so I see those two things as being the primary issues. And with a renewal application pending, for me, the discussion is, should that renewal be denied?
Thank you. I think it should be denied because there was misrepresentation. At least we have proof, and she admitted on the second point you made, the misrepresentation. So she's admitted to that.
And Dr. Stewart?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that there's obviously misrepresentation, perhaps, on the application and the reapplication. Probably what is more disturbing for me is, as Dr. Meyer mentioned, is being terminated twice for boundary issues. I'm not sure that if there is more consideration to approve a relicensure, that there must be some type of concomitant requirement for investigating further for Dr. Gentry to undergo instruction in term additional instruction on ethics and boundary violations.
So I think the agreement at this point is that we are still seeing the potential code violations as being the violations that we are supporting as a group. We do have before us right now, you know, we do need to make a decision on the complaint. And then, yes, we do have the application before us as well. And so I want to make sure procedurally we're able to cover both. Ms. Shreve, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's a very quandary. I mean, in the sense that I represent the general public. We have a person that's been terminated twice for stepping boundaries. If, in my opinion, if she were to be licensed, it would need to be on a consent agreement with a practice monitor, a restriction of maybe certain area of practice, being incarceration or parolees or whatever. And then I guess what I don't understand is the continuation of this type of behavior. Is that something that needs to be looked at more introspectively from her end by going seeing somebody? I don't know. I think, you know, we're here to protect the public. And so at what point, how do you, if she is allowed to continue license, how do we put the parameters on it to protect the public and ensure that she's getting what she needs?
And I think, Ms. Shreve, to that point, one additional bit of information that we have that is agendized today as well is that she did enter into an interim consent agreement. She has been getting supervised, and her supervisor has provided us a report that there are, you know, that there haven't been any concerns. And I think that while I agree with Dr. Meyer and Dr. Stewart that the concerns before us today are quite significant, mm-hmm. We also have information to indicate that perhaps safe practice can be a possibility, and that this is an individual that maybe can be rehabilitated with proper supervision and supports both professionally and possibly personally. Dr. Meyer?
The concern I have is that for both of these terminations, this was not caught by a supervisor. This did not come out in supervision or clinical oversight or administrative oversight. It was a coworker seeing them at a restaurant, indicating that they left together, that there's texts that they were spending time together in addition. And then in the second instance, it was a inmate that is now bringing this to a head. I don't know that supervision under a consent agreement is enough to protect the community.
Thank you. At this time, it's just deliberation for board members. Thank you, though.
And this is Dr. Davis, Madam Chair. I would just say that the pattern here is what's concerning, right? I mean, I think that it's taking this, each individual event, maybe it's like, all right, you know, you misunderstood your settlement with an ex-employer. However, you know, with that ex-employer, you were also, you know, under investigation for inappropriate contact or too familiar with inmates or those in your care, you know, then we have another issue with another employer. Like this pattern is, I think, what concerns me. And I tend to lean towards as part of the discussion of what level of supervision is appropriate. This isn't a failure to create proper documentation or to make sure we're running the proper assessment or choosing an evidence-based treatment. This is really down to almost an employment supervision issue of how these things come about and or complaints and or concerns that come from those in her care or other colleagues. And that is the part that I'm really struggling with is how do you monitor that? And I think, you know, you hit it on the head, Dr. Meyer. It's like that it's not a practice issue. This is an issue with regard to your personal behavior with those that are entrusted with your care. And that, I don't know that we have the purview to monitor that, quite honestly, and I'm not sure we should. So that is where my concern lies with this application, as well as with this complaint.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a psychologist, I happen to believe that rehabilitation is possible. I believe in the process of treatment and therapy, and I think we make a significant impact. And I think that should be considered in this situation with Dr. Gentry as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Malat?
Yeah, you know, I think all of you have made good points, and we're talking about character issues and, you know, that whole fundamental being truthful, being honest, and how do you change that? You know, it's not just, as Dr. Davey was saying, you know, writing better progress notes or doing a better assessment or choosing the right tools. Those are all teachable skills. And sometimes we fall behind on those skills, and you get practice and supervision and training to, you know, sharpen and refine your skills. So we're going beyond skills, and we're talking about telling the truth, you know, being honest, doing judgment, you know, making good judgments. You know, why would you take a picture to a site? I mean, that is, you know, if you have such pictures, you would be very, very careful with that. You know, you're not kind of lackadaisical with it. And it is, you know, I hear what Dr. Stewart said in terms of psychologists do believe change is possible. And would it be therapy that is needed as opposed to just practice, you know, monitor? I think a practice monitor is necessary if a license were to be reinstated, but also kind of that fundamental adjustment to where you make good decisions and you use good judgment as you make these decisions. So it's a real dilemma, you know, revoking or not renewing a license is a serious matter. It is somebody's livelihood. And so as a board, you know, we take that very, very seriously because it's an employment issue. It's a survival issue, you know, or you have to change career paths. And, you know, I need to be convinced that this change of behavior is indeed possible, you know, and the person is willing to make that change. And which is why I ask those questions. At some point, I need to hear that you're willing, you know, it's kind of tell the truth and show remorse and kind of move forward. So I'm really torn. I you know, my personal belief is to believe in the best in everybody and that change is possible. But is it? And, you know, I don't have a clear answer. So.
Dr. Malat, can I ask a question of you, I think? Is a fitness of duty evaluation something that you would
this is fitness for duty about? Is, yeah, I don't know.
I was asking more of my psychology.
Yeah, fitness for duty is, you know, when people are experiencing dementia, you know, they're experiencing changes in their health or, you know, certain characteristics, and you're wondering, are they ready to come back?
Dr. Meyer?
I don't see how any kind of evaluation would get at the underlying concerns here.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Galvin, I have a question, and I'm going to ask it, but if we need to go into executive session, that's fine as well. I think it's just more procedural though, but when a license is, I think we have denied or revoked. Right now we have an application before us. So if we were to deny that application, it would be a denial. What individuals have options after a prescribed amount of time to reapply, correct? Or would that be just contingent on the circumstances?
after a denial or a revocation, Heidi, I believe this board requires a 2-year period of time, or is it 5?
Madam Chair, Ms. Galvin, I don't know that there's any statutory limitation. That is my recollection, but let me...
Some of my boards have 2 years, some have 5.
I believe Ms. Pacanon is correct. I do not recall seeing that time limitation.
Okay. So in theory, if she were denied or revoked, she could, you know, reapply, you know, next Tuesday, but there would obviously have to be some demonstration that the issues that led to her denial or revocation had been remediated. The board would have the authority, and I would argue the obligation, to ensure that any unprofessional conduct was remediated.
Okay. And so I think, you know, so the reason why I asked that, and one thing that comes to mind for me is I think the question before us is, to what degree we supervise that potential rehabilitation, or we put that onus on the individual. So for example, under that circumstance, if we were to say, hey, this, we're going to deny the reapplication, then that would put it on an applicant to come up with their pathway to prove to the board that they've remediated these concerns, they've worked on these concerns, they've you know, sought treatment themselves or what have you, of what that looks like. But they would have the ability to come back and say, here are all of the things that I did to remediate this. Here's my documentation. Here's, you know, all of the things. Or the other option would be that we would guide that. And so I'm kind of hearing that not that it helps with, because like I said, I'm torn as well, but I'm kind of hearing that the intent as a professional, for me, I too believe, I personally believe in the good in everybody. And I do believe in pathways of rehabilitation. I'm struggling with, to what point is it the board's responsibility to guide that rehabilitation, or is it something we, you know, recommend and expect and put the onus on an individual to come back and show that that's been done? But either way, I don't think one way or the other is not moving down that pathway of rehabilitation. So that's where, because for me, I'm always like, hey, we're in health and human services, where we work in a field where we can rehabilitate. And we believe that people can be rehabilitated, and that's, and we know that it can happen. For me, I think either pathway, it doesn't dismiss that one would or wouldn't happen, like we've seen in, you know, other circumstances. Additional thoughts? Dr. Davey, were you going to add something?
I believe what I'm going to ask for is legal advice, and so I apologize, but I need an executive session.
Okay, that's a motion and a second. Any additional discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Sorry, Mr. Wynn, I moved quick. All right, the motion does carry.
This is Ms. Poe. I'm going to go ahead while board members are rejoining general session and give out the first code word. The first CE code word is watermelon. Watermelon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. All right. We are now back in regular session. Again, still in deliberations. At this point, we need to answer the question as to whether or not we have facts to support a possible violation, and conclude that a violation occurred or not. Anybody have any comments? All right. Hearing none, I'll go ahead and state that at this time, I do think that we have sufficient evidence based on the dismissals of the terminations of two employments related to boundary violations. We have misrepresentation on multiple applications to the board. We have an admission that misrepresentation was done intentionally out of consideration to how that would affect the individual. And because of that, I think we have substantiative enough information that would state that unprofessional conduct has occurred. I think that in looking at the citations that were noticed to the individual, I would welcome board feedback, but I do still feel that at this time, ARS 32-20616C, making or using statements of a character tending to deceive or mislead. ARS 32-20616J, making a fraudulent or untrue statement to the board or its investigator, staffs, or consultants. ARS 32-20616 116M, using fraud, misrepresentation, or deception to obtain or attempt to attain a psychology license or to pass or attempt to pass a psychology licensing examination or an assistant another person to do so. ARS 32-206-116O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. And then association ethics principles of psychologists and code of conduct, ARS 32-206-116DD, violating an ethical standard adopted to the board as it pertains to sections 3.05, multiple relationships. Before us, we do have the matter of what direction we want to, now that we've substantiated in identifying those concerns, we need to identify what stance we want to take moving forward and then make a decision on the licensee's application. Ms. Galvin.
So you have articulated the factual occurrences that you believe constituted unprofessional conduct, and then you stated those provisions of law that you believe were violated. Could we take a vote to ensure that the majority of the board members concur with your findings of fact and your conclusions?
Absolutely. For the findings of facts that I listed and the conclusions of the statutory violations, we'll go ahead with a roll call. Ms. Poe.
Is there a second?
Oh, sorry, that is a motion.
Seconded.
We have a second, and we will do a roll call vote. Ms. Poe, if you could please call roll.
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Wynn?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm so sorry. Am I seeing that we've lost Dr. Gentry? Is she no longer on the call?
She is on the call.
Oh, okay. She must be on my other screen. Thanks. I'm going to find her.
Yep. No worries. Okay. So the next course of action will be to determine to make a decision on the application before us. Do we have any discussion on the application for renewal? Hearing none, do we have a motion? Dr. Catarino?
I will make a motion that based on these statute violations and the Department of Corrections evaluation, that the motion to renew the psychological license be denied at this time.
Do we have a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Gowen?
May I ask, can you hear me? As part of that motion, we do have an interim consent agreement in place. Would it be the board's preference that that interim consent agreement remain in place until the denial is finally adjudicated?
Yes, I would agree.
And second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Ms. Poe, we do need a roll call vote.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Malat?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Nguyen?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank all the parties for joining us today and being present, answering our questions and being available for board staff and for the board members. From here, board staff will be in contact, or Ms. Galvin will work with Mr. Barber on what the next steps will be. The interim agreement, the interim consent agreement remains in place.
And can I just a point of clarification from Ms. Galvin, perhaps?
Yes.
From Mr. Barber. I'm so sorry. So just to be clear, the vote was to obviously find the violations and to deny the application. Does that mean there's no revocation?
Well, correct. The denial kind of supersedes any revocation because the application for renewal is pending.
Okay.
Yes.
So basically her license expired and then it's not going to renew.
Her license remains in effect because she filed the application for renewal, and her license remains active until such time the board acts on the application. The board denied that application today, but the notice of denial has to go out and the time for her to appeal that denial has to run. So she has an active license, although she's under supervision, until the time for her to request a hearing runs.
Okay. I was just wondering about, because I'm not as concerned about the appeal. I just wanted to get clarification because earlier you were talking about the time frame in which to reapply. And you said, I was thinking what you were thinking, that there, like every other board that I work with, there's a statutory time frame, but I guess there isn't one. So it would just be
Don't you call me on Monday and we'll can discuss this further. Members of the board, can I just see if there's a consensus? Hypothetically, if Dr. Gentry and her attorney, if they perhaps would agree to the voluntary surrender of her license, would the board accept that in lieu of the denial?
Yes.
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 Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Ms. Galvin will be in touch with you, Dr. Gentry, and your attorney. We are going to go ahead and take a comfort break. If everyone wants to take 15 minutes, and we will return back here at 11:55.
Madam Chair, this is Ms. Poe. I know board members are still joining. I'm going to go ahead and give out the next CE code word. For anybody that's listening for CE, the next CE code word is firecracker. Firecracker. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I believe that we have just about everybody back. Dr. Malat, are you back? And Mr. Nguyen. Okay, perfect. While we're waiting for Dr. Malat, I believe we have a quorum, so we'll go ahead for time and move forward. The time is now 11:56 a.m., and we are moving to the second section of timed items on this agenda, scheduled for review on or after 10:30 a.m. Item number 10 is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding Paige Huff's request to terminate probation in case number 2052. Ms. Michelson, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. In 2019, Ms. Huff submitted her behavior analyst application to the board. While her application was pending, the board did receive a complaint against Ms. Huff alleging that she was engaged in the unauthorized practice of behavior analysis and providing supervision to individuals employed at the agency. Ultimately, upon review of the complaint and her application, the board accepted the CBA's recommendation to grant Ms. Huff a license pursuant to a consent agreement that imposed a 12-month term of probation, during which time she would be required to meet with a pre-approved practice monitor on a twice-monthly basis and complete 9 hours of continuing education in the areas of ethics. Ms. Huff did sign the proposed consent agreement and was issued her behavior analyst license in March of 2021. She did engage in practice monitoring with licensed behavior analyst Jamie Jones, who did provide the board with monitoring plan and four very robust quarterly reports. This practice monitoring did end in April of 2022. Ms. Jones notated in her final report that all goals have been met and that there are no remaining concerns at this time. In addition, Ms. Huff did complete the CE requirement last year, doing 10 hours total of CE education. On June 8th, Ms. Huff did submit a three-page letter to the board outlining her request to terminate probation and included what she had learned from this process and what changes she has made to the practice. The CBA did not have quorum to review her request at their last meeting on June 30th, so it is before the board today for consideration. I do see that we have Ms. Huff present as well as Ms. Jones, who is available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Michelson? Hearing none, Ms. Huff, if you would like to unmute yourself, introduce yourself, and if you would like to make a statement at this time, you are welcome to do so.
Hi, I'm Paige Huff. I did the year of probation, and I, before that, got hours for my BCABA and my BCBA, and I feel like with all the hours I've completed and supervision techniques I have now learned, I am even more qualified to keep going and helping others not get in the same situations that I was in, as I know it's happened before, with like out of state licensure BCBAs and stuff. So I'm really ready to just help the field and continue to help it grow and understand the liabilities and, you know, documenting things and moving forward with ethical practices.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Huff? Hearing none, we do have Ms. Jones with us as well. Ms. Jones, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself for the board, and if you would like to make a statement, you are welcome to do so now.
Hi, I'm Jamie Jones, behavior analyst here in the state of Arizona, and was the practice monitor with Paige through the last year, and really just appreciate the opportunity to be a part of the process and really dive in to helping and guiding people to more ethical practices, which I believe she has completed and done so.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Jones? Dr. Davey?
Ms. Jones, thank you for submitting the quarterly reports, and I've reviewed them. I wonder if you would just comment with regard to a few of the objectives, primarily starting, I think, around objective 10 or so. Some of those took a little bit longer to kind of work through. And Ms. Huff, feel free if you'd like to chime in as well. Just kind of wondered a little bit about the cadence with regard to that, 10 in particular, about the compliance by addressing barriers to effectiveness of treatment and writing, documentation and writing. It just seemed like that did take the full year. Is there any particular reasons for that, or is just that how things were addressed? I would just be interested to kind of know how it was kind of stretched out.
Sure. I think from what I'm hearing, just a little bit about the timeline, I kind of just followed somewhat of the guidance of what was asked for as far as how many hours were spent together collaborating and really just assisting and following a guided path to what that looked like. So my approach was really looking at the background of organizational and how really our practices and application should be
connected to that and our guiding path. And so a lot of that really, I think, just fell between, again, the allotted time that the board had kind of alluded monthly to spend with her, and then her own schedule of all the things that she does and filtering that in as part of her, you know, committed action every day, every week, or where she had it to kind of comply with all that was being requested of changes. So a lot of this had to do with looking at the organizational pieces and how we take those ethical practices that we learn as an individual and operating as an kind of independent practitioner and really extending that to a very managerial place where that's really extending outside of yourself and into everybody in which you have some connection of liability to, and having the ability to follow a guided path in doing so. I think that we all need that in a business. It wouldn't be easy to run it without it. And so a lot of that was just kind of looking at that piece and where she could use the assistance on the hows, the whys, and then some examples of what that could look like so that she can bring it up in her practice. I looked more minimally, I think, at the application piece of where all of that organizational would go over into the practice of application through her caseload in which we looked at. So that was sporadically through the entire process, but I do believe it was a smaller piece of the process. And it was a much more front load of standard operation procedures, really deep discussions on the functionality of those, the protection of those, and the guidance of them through everyday practice currently and in the future. I hope that that answered the question.
I think that did more than answer my question. My question is more about like just the cadence of things. Like some things, you know, she immediately was able to get to 50-75% within like the first report. Other things just took a little bit longer to get there. And I think what I was just wondering, was that just a function of kind of like the operations you just explained, or was that a function of it being a bigger issue once you got in there?
It was part of the operations that I explained, but I would say that would also be connected with what already existed. In some areas, and in some areas, maybe there was less currently existing that needed more attention.
And my final question, I'll turn it back over to others on the board. In looking at your report, in terms of like a summary, are there any other areas that you'd encourage yourself to continue to develop in? Were there any areas you were, you know, a little bit shaky on whether or not this you should kind of met those the criteria to move on? Like, what is kind of the wrap up for her and kind of maybe two or three sentences? Are there any concerns from you as we look to move to terminate probation?
I like the question. I feel like it's dual answered for me. Part of it, I feel like, is more just me as an individual and my qualifications and expertise and where I felt comfortable on the measure systems and what would qualify to some degree. I do very raw and transparent feel like I didn't know if I was the most qualified in these spaces. I am an eager learner and definitely willing to research and do all my parts of figuring out where and what this is needing to look like and what we're asking for an outcome and how to get there. So that really incorporated a lot of what I brought to the table. Personally, I have done a lot of extension myself of receiving mentoring and CEUs and going through accreditation processes myself, for my business and things of that nature that have helped me feel or gain some confidence, along the process. And then on the other, end of it, I did, offer, suggestions. I wouldn't say, I guess, in my opinion, that it's more specific to Paige, but more of what I see a lot in the field that could use some guidance for better practices. So some of those suggestions were where you get your professional development, how you're supporting that, how you're apprehending that information and putting it actually into practice and staying with the ethical standards as they move and grow and things of that nature. So there was definitely some conversations, resources, and suggestions that were offered there. But nothing that I personally feel is specifically rocky to her or her situation.
Thank you. And I think that that's, you captured that in your final paragraph as well. Finally, I would just like to, from the board standpoint, want to thank you for being willing to be a practice monitor for Ms. Huff. I think, and Ms. Michelson can, Ms. Packer, you can correct me, but I believe you're the first one that we've engaged in terms of behavior analysts. And so we appreciate your thoroughness in reporting and your willingness to serve the community and to serve Ms. Huff. So thank you for that. I have no further questions, Madam Chair, and so I'm happy to make a motion.
I would like to real quick make a comment along those same lines. Ms. Jones, you are the first practice monitor we've had. Which also means, Ms. Huff, you are the first practice monitor we've needed. So let's also acknowledge that we appreciate.
Well, let's acknowledge that we're one for one. Yeah, let's acknowledge one for one success. We're successful with Ms. Huff and Ms. Jones.
You embrace this process. You wrote a very thorough letter that indicated that you've learned a lot, and I hope that this has helped you grow both personally and professionally. And I'm excited to hear that this, you know, was so valuable to you. Ms. Jones, you just made a comment about not being sure if you were quite qualified. I think that one of the areas that we're in right now is that there's a lot of uncertainty in the role of practice monitoring and what that means, because it's something that's unknown to the behavior analyst community, very different than like the psychology, where the psychology board has psychologists that they can say, hey, try this person. And we had to do a similar list, but do it a little bit more organically. And so one of the things that I think is really powerful and important for not just the stage you set for being the first, but the documentation you provided and how thorough you were and the goal setting and everything that you did, I think goes to show, even in that space of discomfort in the beginning, I would argue that you are qualified, and you were qualified, and you were a fit for what we were looking for. And so, again, thank you very much for taking that, you know, kind of leap of a faith in this area that everybody is very, very, very uncomfortable. And we're getting some, you know, feedback on that. And we're, you know, we would love to have a list of other practice monitors. And so I think now that you've set that stage, which again, you've set that bar very high, you did a great job with documenting and doing those things. I hope that some of that area of discomfort has subsided for you, and that you would be willing to serve in this capacity again, because it was greatly appreciated. So thank you for that. Are there any other questions or comments for Ms. Huff or Ms. Jones? Hearing none, Dr. Davey, you had a...
Yes, I'll go ahead. Yep, I'll go ahead and make the motion that we terminate probation for Ms. Huff, and that she has successfully completed the task that we put forward to her. And yes, thank you for that, Ms. Huff.
Yes.
Second.
Dr. Stewart.
Second the motion.
Oh, okay, a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none.
I would just say thank you again, Ms. Huff. I know that this was hard for you to go through this with the CBA and then to go through this, but your willingness to learn from this speaks volumes, and we look forward to a long and successful career with your ABA Adventure organization and you personally here in Arizona. So thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you guys for being here and for staying a little bit later than we had anticipated.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
All right. We will now move to agenda item number 11. I am the lead on this case, so I will provide a summary to the board. Switching documents, but they're actually moving right, so we should be good. All right. In January of 2022, the board received a complaint related to some possible multiple relationship concerns from a former patient. The complaint alleges that the Dr. Russick engaged in multiple conversations around sexual relationships between herself and her husband, shared information outside or unrelated to the session, that there was several conversations around Bitcoins and setting up a Coinbase, as well as a dinner and some additional meetings with the complainant's husband to help Dr. Russick with setting up her Bitcoin. The complaint also alleges that after the professional relationship was completed, there was an incident in which the complainant needed support and called Dr. Russick and relayed that Dr. Russick told her that she was overreacting and dismissed the concerns. And then shortly after, they ceased communications with one another. The licensee originally responded with her qualifications. She outlined the nature of her practice and the work that she was doing with complainant AY. She initially was surprised to hear that the complainant was upset and that there was some misunderstanding of how the relationship, the professional relationship ceased. She acknowledged that they did not start as friends, but then friendship did develop. And then she also acknowledged that she ended therapy with AW, but did continue keeping in touch with her and identified that was for in a therapeutic capacity. She acknowledged that she did not engage in any business related to cryptocurrency with AY directly, but that felt that because AY's husband was not her client, or ex-husband was not her client, that was an individual that she could utilize for support with her crypto cryptocurrency. During the initial complaint screening, we acknowledged concerns related to potential violations of gross negligence, failing retraining financial records, providing unnecessary services, and exploiting a client or a patient, and as well as concerns around multiple relationships and exploitative relationships. Following the complaint screening, Dr. Russick did provide for us a self-reflection, acknowledging that she does now see that the boundaries were crossed and that she did allow for a professional account with a personal acquaintance. She also completed several CEUs in the areas of ethics, as well as retained a consultant to review this information and provide her consultation and feedback to the circumstances. That consultant does state that supervised practice or practice monitoring for a period of time would be beneficial for Dr. Russick to ensure that she's fully implementing the changes that he has recommended to her. And that concludes my summary. We do have with us Dr. Russick and her attorney, Ms. McClellan. If you would please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and now would be a good time to make a brief statement. Oh, but we can't hear you, Ms. McClellan. Yeah, it's an audio thing. It's not showing that you're muted, so it's a different audio thing.
Click on the arrow next to your microphone and then select microphone. It will check out your other microphones and choose the right one.
No. But if you are present with her, you're welcome to use her computer if that's easier.
Can you hear us now?
Yep.
Is that better? Okay, yep. Good. Sorry, we were using a phone instead of the computers to prevent feedback, and I had a tech issue, so I apologize. My name's Anne McClellan. I'm the attorney for Dr. Russick. Dr. Russick is also here present today. I'd like to make a brief statement. Dr. Russick presents to you as an experienced psychologist who's practiced for 40 years without any disciplinary issues. She has been extremely open and honest during this process. She's been open to learning each step of the way to address concerns that are raised in the complaint and by the board during the screening process. She has provided detailed responses to the specific allegations made by AY, in addition to the supplemental self-reflection to talk about what she has done to address those concerns, what she's learned, and what her viewpoints are. So I'm not going to go point by point through all of the allegations, other than to remind you that she has denied that there were any discussions about her sexual relationship with her husband. And some of the other allegations are denied, but she wants the board to it to be clear to the board that she recognizes she should have done things differently in this case. And that's why she has been so open and done so much proactive work to learn and grow. She's provided all of her progress notes for this patient, which outline what happened during sessions. Those progress notes match up with the billing records that were requested by the board and submitted to show that contemporaneous with giving the therapy sessions, the billing was submitted through an outside vendor through the billing company. And she sat through the screening committee process. She took to heart all of the concerns. And what we'd like to do is sort of highlight for you today everything that she's done to show that this really is a one-time incident. She made a mistake with boundary crossings with this one patient. It was all non-sexual in nature and not ill-intentioned. She has retained Dr. Larry Seidman, who is present today and would be open to having questions and answering questions from the board. If you'd like him to do that, he's on this call. He is a licensed psychologist. He has experience doing practice supervision and monitoring. He's had 4 2-hour sessions with Dr. Russick since May. So she's been utilizing him on a more than monthly basis for the last 2 months. He's gone in depth into reviewing the complaint, the investigative report, the progress notes, as well as Dr. Russick's responses. And he prepared a report that should be in the board's file going through his analysis, which concludes that Dr. Russick is not a threat to the public. She did make a mistake, which she, to her credit, has owned and taken initiative to learn from. And practice monitoring would be a good idea, but she's not a threat that this board should take her license away or restrict her practice. She has completed over 65 hours of CEUs on her own without board order. That includes boundary issues, ethics, practice suggestions. Those have been through the APA and through other resources. She has also recently joined, and I don't believe you have this information, but she's now a member of the Southern Arizona Psychological Association. And she has put in requests to join peer consultation groups so that moving forward, in addition to having Dr. Seidman, she has an established group peer consultation that she can talk to on a regular basis and go through ethical decision-making models with them should anything arise in the future. She's also made practice changes that were based on her CEUs and recommended by Dr. Seidman. That includes continuing to use the outside billing entity, which we haven't seen any issues with that outside billing entity. She's made physical changes to her office to create better boundaries with patients so that there are screens in place so that when a patient walks in, all they see is the bathroom and the office and no other portion of her home office. She has decreased her client base, so she's currently only actively seeing 5 clients to ensure that she is engaging in all of the boundary checks, the documentation that's been recommended by Dr. Seidman, and, you know, crossing all of her T's and dotting all of her I's. She's returned to a risk management type practice. She'll acknowledge to you that she allowed countertransference in this case to cross boundaries with AY that she'd never crossed before, so that she developed a friendship with a client rather than a strictly professional relationship. Again, there was no sexual misconduct in this case, but she recognizes that she didn't have clear enough boundaries so that there was no confusion with the client. And she's returned to a risk management practice to ensure that doesn't happen again. That includes engaging in a lot of self-reflection, and we hope the board can see that self-reflection in the supplemental response that she provided, which was heartfelt, and we feel detailed to explain to the board members the work she's done and her viewpoints, to admit her mistakes and show what she's learned from it. She's also returned to self-care. That means meditation, she's exercising, she's creating, following the peer consultation through Dr. Seidman to do what he has suggested she implement in her personal and professional life to ensure there isn't countertransference in the future that doesn't go unchecked. Dr. Russick is an example, we believe, of what the board should want to see when they have a board complaint. She's a human, and as, you know, practicing psychologists, there are mistakes that can happen, and unfortunately she made one with AY after 40 years of practice. But what we hope the board will recognize is all of the affirmative actions and steps she's taken to show the board how seriously she takes this and how intent she is on making sure it doesn't happen again. We ask that the board take Dr. Seidman's recommendation. He has agreed, and regardless of what the board does here today, Dr. Seidman and Dr. Russick have an agreement that he will serve in the same type of role for the next 6 months, meeting on at least a monthly basis, in addition to her voluntarily being part of a group peer consultation group. That's in addition to Dr. Seidman. We ask that you take into consideration the 65 plus hours of continuing education she did to show you she understands that she should have done more to draw clearer boundaries with this client to prevent any confusion, to prevent those misunderstandings on multiple relationships, and to make sure it was a clear professional relationship-only boundary. And so we ask that the board take all of that into consideration and see that she's really, although she made mistakes, a model, we hope, licensee on how a licensee should approach a board complaint and board investigation. She didn't fraudulently bill for anything. She didn't provide treatment that was unnecessary, but she did fail to recognize her countertransference and that it had allowed her to make some boundary crossings, and she's implemented things to make sure that doesn't happen in the future. And so what we're asking today is for the board to consider what Dr. Seidman has recommended and allow Dr. Russick to continue practicing with that guidance in place, and hopefully give her credit for those numerous CEU hours if it believes further education is warranted. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to confirm, AY is not present, correct?
Correct. I have not heard from her.
Okay. And AY, if you are present, you may unmute yourself and make a brief statement at this time. Hearing none, we do have Dr. Seidman with us. Dr. Seidman, if you would like to make a brief statement at this time, you may do so.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me here today. I just want to echo what Ms. McClellan mentioned, that Dr. Russick has really taken this complaint to heart and has made some very energetic changes and has really taken this seriously. And as a person who's done practice monitoring before, and have done evaluations in the interest of board complaints. I really believe that continuing practice monitoring would be very helpful for her and our public. I really don't believe she is a threat to the public. I think she was well-intentioned and made some decisions that because of her personal life at the time, weren't the best for her client.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Seidman? All right, hearing none.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Seidman, thank you for your very thorough write-up in response to the call for you to be the practice monitoring consultant for Dr. Rusick. I think that's excellent. And Dr. Rusick, I have to commend you on what Ms. McClellan outlined to be going really above and beyond any requirements that I would have of you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Dr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, thank you for your work, Dr. Seidman. I do react a little bit to the statement that she's not a threat to the public when we have a complainant saying that this boundary crossing was very upsetting, especially when in crisis. And wouldn't this complaint suggest otherwise that there is a concern for the public?
Well, I appreciate that thought. I believe there is a differing perspectives on how that crisis may have been handled. I'm assuming you mean the telephone call that occurred months after.
Right. The claimant thinking she's still receiving services from Dr. Rusick because of those boundary issues. And when she was in crisis and sought help, she did not receive competent services.
Yeah. I agree. The perspective of both parties, the relationship was blurred, obviously. Dr. Rusick and I have talked extensively about making that clear to all parties ongoing, what the relationship is, and documenting those kinds of conversations so it's very clear to all parties what the situation is. My understanding is Dr. Rusick attempted to give the former client resources in that particular situation that you're alluding to, and the consumer didn't hear it, and because I believe because of the blurred boundary.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions for Dr. Seidman? All right, hearing none, we will move into deliberations. I am the lead, so I will begin. I, like Dr. Stewart, I greatly appreciate the extent to which Dr. Rusick proactively took CEUs, got a practice monitor, you know, did things, recognized rather quickly after the initial screening that, hey, maybe there was a boundary crossing, acknowledged it, and then put a plan of action in place. I think for me and kind of where I'm struggling with is under what options we have before us today, to what degree it necessitates which type of action. I think the challenge is that, yes, we have a potential violation. The violation was acknowledged both in self-reflection, which is great. Like it is always appreciated when a psychologist can sit, you know, self-reflect and say, hey, yeah, maybe I could have done this different, better. I recognize it now. Like, that is always appreciated. but before us then, in my opinion, would be that there's still a statutory violation. And as such, we would need to adjudicate that with that in mind. But as far as to what degree, I appreciate Dr. Seidman's feedback on a practice monitor, but I don't know for me that this, and given all the work that she's done, would rise to the level of needing a consent agreement for that practice monitor if she's already voluntarily explored the practice monitor. And I know there's certain things that would rise to a level of saying like, oh no, hey, we need to oversee this, but I would look to my psychologist colleagues to maybe provide some feedback as far as, yeah, we have, you know, a potential violation. She's acknowledged the violation. What would be the best remediation, Dr. Meyer?
So I don't think it's a potential violation. I think there's a violation. She's acknowledged that. Then she's done everything that we would have asked her to do. But I think that it sounds like she's open to continuing under a practice monitor for an additional 6 months. I do think that needs a consent agreement. And then we move on. But they've put together a better plan of action, corrective action than what we have probably ever asked of somebody. So I think that's sufficient. But there was a violation. We did have harm to a client. And so we just do a consent agreement and we're good.
Yes. I agree. That's what I agree. And I think just by having the consent agreement, it just puts in place legally that the practice monitor continues for 6 months. Otherwise, something could come up and may not continue. We have no control over it. But I agree. She's done a remarkable job.
Ms. Shreve?
Ms. Galvin, I don't know if you want to answer this in open session or not, but other than a consent decree, we can issue a letter of concern, but that's a letter of concern, not if there's a violation, right?
That's correct. That's typically reserved where the board has not found a violation. So here you have an admission that there was a violation. You have an opinion from someone who has worked closely with her for the last couple of months that practice monitoring should continue and would be a benefit to the doctor and to the public. So that would be very important for the board to take into consideration. He himself, the practice monitor, is recommending that it continue.
All right. And the way to do that, the path to that is a consent decree.
It would be a consent agreement that would be probation. And the terms of probation would be practice monitoring for, you know, a period of 6 months. I think he said that, you know, at least one time a month would be advisable. You could require him to submit a report every, you know, 2 or 3 months to the board to describe how that practice monitoring is going. She's taken 65 hours of CE. If you wish to, you know, impose some disciplinary CE on her, you could acknowledge the 65 hours, acknowledge that, you know, maybe perhaps 12 of those hours would be in satisfaction of her, you know, discipline for this matter, and that those 12 hours would not be counted towards the renewal of her license. That would be, you know, in line with what the practice monitor is suggesting or recommending.
All right. Thank you.
You could then, if you know, set this for an informal, if you believe that there was a violation, but if it's, we get a consent agreement worked out in the interim, then we could vacate the informal.
All right.
Dr. Davis-Wilson,
Dr. Noah,
given the direction this is going, and if Dr. Seidman will you know, most likely be, I probably need to recuse because he is a direct employee of mine. I serve as a secondary supervisor, so indirect, but so I feel a little awkward. So I'm going to recuse myself. So
thank you.
So I'm willing to make a motion.
Okay.
That we that this move to an informal hearing, but in lieu of that, if they if we'll offer a, is that right, Ms. Galvin? We'd move it to informal hearing, although we'd offer the opportunity for the doctor to agree to go into consent agreement using a practice monitor for 6 months, meeting with the practice monitor one time a month, asking the practice monitor to provide us a report every maybe 3 months. So there'll be a 3 month and then a final report. Acknowledging that she has taken 65 hours of CE already and allowing 12 of those to basically be a satisfaction of this disciplinary action. So those 12 would not be towards her renewal of her next license. That would be my motion.
I'll second that.
And would the violations be those that are set forth in the investigative report?
Yes. Thank you for, yes. Thank you.
We have
I know additionally time for me to say something. Yeah, there are a number of the, I know this isn't a pro, it's a weird, I'm just apologizing that I'm interjecting, I guess. There's a number of those violations that deal with like fraudulent billing, providing unnecessary services, et cetera. And I would just ask if the board would consider if all of those need to be in that public disciplinary consent because of their impact. But again, I apologize for interrupting.
No, that's
the way this is.
Thank you.
That's a good point.
Yeah, Ms. Shreve, if we could take a look at those, because I think in the initial case review, and I think that we did ask, there was some accusations of like billing for services like that were during personal time or what have you, and we asked for those records from the EOBs from the complainant, and we never received any. So I think. From the complaint, not from you guys. So I think that like that one we may need, I think in what we have before us, we may need to articulate if we are going to keep that one, what the findings of fact for that would be.
Which doesn't sound like that is an issue.
Right.
So I think the issue is the boundaries.
Dr. Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was also an aspect of record keeping, of progress notes, of not clear what Dr. Resick talked about, some as being potentially an intervention in trying to help with these outings, was not documented. Again, there was so much blurring, it was not clear what was and was not therapy. And so I think that it wasn't necessarily maintaining financial records, but in regard to clinical records.
How about, in the interest of trying to going back and forth, if Anne and I and staff work on a proposed agreement with findings and conclusions, and then we would bring it back to you at the next meeting to see if it's acceptable. But in the meantime, we can kind of negotiate that.
I'm good with that. I would approve.
Dr. Meyer?
Yep.
Dr. Katarina?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great, because I think we do need to just make sure we have findings of fact on all five of those. So thank you for that. So so right now the motion is to work with Ms. McClellan on drafting a consent agreement that will come before us for review and decision. So we do need any further discussion?
Do we have to withdraw the other motion?
No, that's the same motion.
It's the same motion.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep. I was just summarizing it just because it got a little bit muddled. So we do need a roll call vote.
No, I think just authorizing myself and staff to negotiate a consent agreement and moving it to an informal that can be vacated if we reach a settlement.
Perfect. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Dina opposed, and my reason for the opposition is that I would have issued a non-disciplinary letter of concern, taking into account the remedial actions that the psychologist had voluntarily taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. And we had one recusal. The motion does carry. So Ms. McClellan, Ms. Galvin will be in touch with you and you guys will have a chance to draft that out. Dr. Seidman, thank you for being here and thank you for continuing to support Dr. Russick and Ms. Galvin will be in touch as well as needed.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Russick.
Thank you.
All right. We will now move to agenda item number 12. Ms. Pakanon, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair. Because this matter consists almost entirely of confidential health information, my summary in the public session will be very general. On June 16th, board staff was contacted by a healthcare professional in the state of Ohio who reported some concerns about an individual whose contact information she traced to Akia Watkins, a resident of Arizona. Upon confirming on my part that Dr. Akia Watkins is a psychologist licensed by the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners, local responders were contacted, and in the process of that contact, those responders affirmed to board staff that Dr. Watkins had very recently begun receiving care for the reported concern. And the details of this event are summarized in the report beginning with page 7. Staff then reached out to Dr. Watkins and arranged an interview with her on June 30th. She consented to participate, and her attorney, Jack Kleekin, was present for that interview. We've summarized that interview as well in your report. Additionally, you will find the medical records that are germane to this matter in your report. The final component of the report that we prepared is a letter submitted from Dr. Watkins' employment supervisor, Jennifer Peter, Dr. Jennifer Peter. Dr. Watkins is employed by Creighton University, and her job site is on the Phoenix campus, and her supervisor, Dr. Peter, is on the Omaha campus. I want to clarify or make clear that board staff has not opened a complaint against Dr. Watkins. At this time, we are presenting to you the preliminary information that we have assembled up to this point. In the report, I've identified at least some of the options for the board to consider with respect to what are the next steps. There may be other options for the board that are identified for the board to consider as more information is gathered. And so at this time, the board may wish to meet in executive session for purposes of discussing information with Dr. Watkins and her attorney, Mr. Kleekin. I can see that they are both present here today. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Pakanon? Hearing none. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. Ms. Galvin and Ms. Pakanon, what is the time frame for reporting to the board if a psychologist is impaired?
We can go into an executive session.
Okay.
And if there is a motion for executive session, I would ask that it include legal advice as well as reviewing confidential health information.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? My only question is, are we moving everybody in, even for the legal advice?
I would start off with including Dr. Watkins and her counsel. And then if there's legal advice, we'll beam them back.
Okay.
I guess my question then is just because Dr. Meyer did have a legal advice question, are we just going to table his for the moment?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries.
And as board members are rejoining general session, I'm going to go ahead and give out the next CE code word. The next CE code word is lemonade. Lemonade. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We're back in regular session. Do we have any further discussion? Do we have any questions for Dr. Watkins? Dr. Meyer, did you want to make a statement?
I would make a motion that we take no action.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 I'm going to abstain.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? All right. If there's one abstention, the motion carries. Thank you very much, Dr. Watkins, and your attorney for being here. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We will now move to agenda item number 13, and that's going to be Ms. Pakanon. Would you please provide a summary to the board?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. You'll recall during your May meeting that you had directed staff with guidance from Ms. Galvin to draft a substantive policy statement clarifying ARS 32-2075A as it relates to the licensure exemption for school psychologists. And as part of that process, the substantive policy statement is to reflect the changes to the statute that were enacted by legislation recently passed at House Bill 2178. That those changes are not going to be in effect until September 24th of this year. However, by preparing this draft now, that enables you the opportunity to review it and potentially to share it with stakeholder groups to gather their input before it is filed as a final document with the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. So we hope that the draft accurately reflects the direction that you gave to us and reflects your discussion during that meeting. So I provided you with the markup of the statute, the changes that are made as a result of House Bill 2178. And then on page 3 begins the draft of the substantive policy statement itself. I am not sure if Dr. Catarino might have some additional input and perspective as she chaired the committee that brought stakeholders together to look at the statute prior to the introduction of the legislation I mentioned.
I looked it over. I think it captures what we talked about. My biggest concern was the IEEs because in the federal law, it just says a person qualified to do an IEE. It doesn't say they have to be a licensed psychologist. And I thought we should make that distinction here, because I believe that is practicing independently outside of a school, because they're not employed by that school district or charter school, just by the nature of the title of an independent educational evaluation. So I thought it was great.
Oh, Dr. Malott, you are...
Yeah, I'm on mute. I have one suggestion. That last paragraph, I would put a subheader so it stands out, because I had to look for it. Maybe like a bold subheader, just independent, you know, so... Because the rest of it is interpreting, in some ways, it's providing clarification on the statute change. But then the last paragraph is the new, you know, so...
Madam Chair, Dr. Malott, I'll have to ask if that's, I'll have to check to see if that's permissible. I know there's a certain style guide that has to be followed with okay. policy statements. It may be perfectly fine. I just don't know, but I will look into that.
Thank you.
And then if the consensus is that this is the draft that the board is happy with, do you wish for me to forward it to at least two organizations come to my mind, ASPA, the Arizona Psychological Association, and then also the School Psychologists Association. There may be other groups, but those are the two primary ones that come to mind. In doing so, I would want to, you know, give them a deadline by which to provide feedback or input, because I think we would want to file this quite close to the effective date of the change to the legislation.
As long as I think that they would give comments, right? They're not going to approve or disprove. It would be like the other thing we sent out before. They would just give comments. Okay.
Should we send it to ADE as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do we need a motion to approve it, Ms. Galvin, or?
Yes, please.
All right. Then I move to approve the substantive statement with the potential subheader clarification forward for approval.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. We'll now move to agenda item number 18, new agenda items for future meetings. Does anybody have any proposed agenda items?
Madam Chair, can I speak to one item that I know the board has requested, and I can provide clarity on the scheduling. I know that you want to have some more insights into the ECCC Part 2, so I'm making arrangements for Dr. Matt Turner, the Director of Assessment with ASPPB, to attend the August board meeting to present information and field your questions. I'm sure he will be sharing information from the town hall meetings that were held recently on the ECCC Part 2.
And could a part of that be for board to look into, are there any educational resource or study materials for that?
Madam Chair, yes, Dr. Meyer, I will make sure that Dr. Turner is prepared to speak to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any additional?
Yes.
Dr. Davey.
Madam Chair, I think that given some of the discussion today, I think I would like to see on a future agenda, time allowing, a discussion of what is question 21 on the psychology application. I do not know the number on the behavior analyst application, to maybe get some clarity around what's the purpose of that question. Do you have any medical, physical, or psychological condition that may in any way currently impair or limit your ability to practice psychology or behavior analysis safely and effectively? I would like to have some discussion with the board of what we're seeking there, what the expectations are around that question. Is it, if you're in treatment, then that's an automatic no. If it's you're in crisis, it's a yes. I think it would just help us as we perhaps navigate some of these situations, just given the fact that mental health is no longer a stigma. People are more willing to discuss it openly and are willing to have discussions around that. And so I, for one, would find that discussion helpful, particularly as we look at applications moving forward, or perhaps complaints.
Dr. Meyer.
And with that, if we could have how many applications have actually selected that, and what, if anything, was done about that at the application review committee.
And maybe Jean giving us some background on it too, yeah.
Should we take bets as to how many people said yes?
Thank you for that.
All right. Do we have any additional information or suggestions? All right. Hearing none, we'll move to agenda item. Oh, Dr. Meyer. Oh, hey, sorry.
Aren't we still short a board member or two? Can we put that on there to see what's going to happen and maybe push to get somebody appointed?
I believe we also have reappointments. So I believe Dr. Malott, myself, and Dr. Davey are all, well, I don't know. They have my date wrong, so they might, I might get to sneak in a little bit longer, but I believe the three of us are all up for reappointment as well right now. Or Dr. Malott's not. She's just in holdover. I don't think she's eligible to be reappointed.
She's held captive.
I thought it was a lifetime appointment.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to resign.
But yeah, I think so both behavior analyst seats, if you will, as well as one of the CBA committee seats are in kind of a holding pattern right now as well, because terms are up, but there has not been a reappointment or a new appointment.
So it seems like that's something that we need to discuss and try to push for action on.
Do you think anything will happen because we are in election season, or will it have to wait till after election?
Wouldn't they want to squeeze some extra people in before they're out?
Oh, yeah.
I think their plates are full.
Madam Chair, members, I will do my best to try to get a status update on all open positions and holdover positions as well.
Have I been on 5 years yet? It feels like 5 years.
I don't think so, because it was pandemic. I mean,
I think it was a 20 person.
You're not even close, Dr. Katarina.
I know.
You've never even had rum cakes, so you're not even on the radar.
Yeah, you haven't been in person for rum cake yet. So. Yeah.
We have to have rum cake next time. I have the recipe, so I can make it.
So. Yeah, no, to go on your sentence. I mean appointment.
Yeah. Oh, we just have to invite Jan to join us. So
we will find that'll be the first in-person meeting. We need an agenda item for Jan.
Maybe that's something we need to discuss. Are we going to have one?
Yeah.
Did you see the new increase on the BA5? There's a big increase of the new variant.
Yeah. So perhaps we need to revisit that on the agenda. Is what I think at this point we can probably count this year out. But I do know that board staff has to start putting in their requests for 2023 calendar dates like yesterday. So we probably do need to revisit that at a future agenda item. All right, hearing nothing else, agenda item 19, adjournment. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
We have seconded. A motion, we have seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, everybody. If you haven't done so already, please make sure you respond to Heidi's email from yesterday so we can get another meeting on the calendar.
Do we know anything more about that?
You will get the documents once we have the meeting secured.
The time and date.
I
will email you in the next 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Awesome.
And Heidi, let me know. Technically, I'm on vacation next week, but I can join, I guess, with remote. Mm-hmm. There's no excuse. So,
thank you.
I'm going to be in your neck of the woods, Mr. Dinah. I think you're in DC, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. So,
fantastic. Bye. All right. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.